Bum, bum, bum.
This show is brought to you by Onnit.com.
Oh, shit.
Go to Onnit.com and use code word church to get 10% off all the great optimization products like Alpha Brain, New Mood, Shroom Tech Immune, Shroom Tech Sport, and Strong Bone. It's code word church to get 10% off. Go to nailedatlife.com and use code word Joey Diaz to get 20% off the premier vapor pen on the market. And if you live in California, only if you're lucky enough to live in California, you do have access to Los Gumis Hermanos, the edibles that Nailed It Life also makes. Check them out. And go to hitesigs.com. That's hitesigs.com. Better tasting, longer lasting. The proof is in the vape. They have e-cigarettes and e-cigars for you. Right now, when you use code word Joey's Church, you get 5 hit e-cigs for $50.
Oh. Oh. Check it out. Yeah. Oh, shit. November 16th, Sam Tripoli,
the days are Jew. Flying. Yeah.
The day the devil was buried at sea, cocksuckers. Oh, oh shit.
To all the ladies in the place with style and grace, allow me to lace these lyrical douches in your bushes. Who rock grooves and make moves
God
with all the
damn. The church of what's happening now, cocksuckers. What's up, Lisa Ayette?
I'm just enjoying that. I haven't heard that song.
That's
for a while.
Fucking great jam. Oh my God. Great jam. You hear it sometimes.
Oh, he's
like,
the best.
Jesus fucking Christ. And what's up with you, my brother?
Just living and loving, man. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to let everybody know I'm going to be in Las Vegas this Saturday night. The 21st. I'll be at Backstage Bar and Billiards with Ryan Sickler of the Crab Feast. Me and him going out there. Get your tickets. Go to Ticketfly.com or SamTripoli.com. Get it, love it. And then the following week, I am in Flycatchers in Tucson. That is the 27th and the 28th. I'm at the Stand Up Scottsdale.
Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Just Vegas. Let's just
okay.
Let's
just Vegas.
Talk and then
just
we'll
Vegas.
Do it later.
Yeah. Vegas.
Vegas. Worry about Vegas. That's it. We're going to try to fucking work on Vegas.
Just trying to get it all in.
News people, January, Tucson.
You need to get my hero to come to your show. Did you hear about the guy who won $2.5 million on the Royals and then $250,000 on
home? Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Where's he from?
I don't know. I know he lives in Vegas. It's like Vegas Vinny or something.
So wait a second.
Oh, he Vegas Vinny, you're right.
$250,000? He won what?
He won $2.5 million on the Royals and then won $250,000 on home.
What did he bet on homes?
I think it would have been $20,000. Yeah, it was 20 grand because it was like 12. It was 12 times.
Did you try to bet on it?
I did, and I couldn't get on my betting site, and I'm like, ah, fuck it. My buddy won $1,500. We were sitting there watching at Sal's Comedy Hall, having a great time.
It's amazing. Could you imagine? I mean, how often does and it was a big day of upsets too. Like every football game was an upset.
Yeah.
Could you imagine hitting all that money, getting $2.5 million off of the Royals? That's like my hero.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that dude didn't tell you what he's lost over the fucking
all the
years.
Time.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, and they always tell you when they win $2.5 million, but ask him what he lost last year.
I could watch my dad play like 10 hands in a row, lose 10 in a row. I go, Dad, how you doing today? Ah, I'm even.
Okay. How the fuck are you even? I just been watching here for an hour.
Just
giving
getting
away
your ass whooped.
Shit.
You missed all the good. I was on a huge roll.
What's going on, Sam?
I'm just happy, man. Things are good, man. Just been gigging, doing my new podcast, the International Bad Boys Hour.
And that's Mondays.
Every Monday.
And then you do Punch Drunk on
and then
Tuesday.
Tomorrow I do Punch Drunk with Ari Shaffir and Tebow.
So as a Punch Drunk guy, and over your years, what do you think happened this week around the Rousey?
A little bit of everything, dude. I think you couldn't really focus. I think she has she was spread a little thin on a lot of stuff. I think she underestimated her opponent. And I think that we just never got to see how great Holly Holmes could be in the ring, in the octagon, because I think everybody knew how great she was and no one really engaged her. So it always looked like she was moving slow. She wasn't doing very good. Exclude her first fight because that octagon shock, right? So you always get to the big dance.
Who did she fight in the first fight?
I'll have to look it up. I'm not sure.
But she fought in Staples Center, co-main event, her first. You remember when Ronda?
That's right. That's right.
Had okay. Who'd she beat that girl in like 14 seconds?
Right.
And so her first fight was there, a little octagon shocked. You're in the big dance. Not only are you in the big dance, but you're the second fight. You're the co-main event. So you exclude that. But I think maybe, and I could be wrong, but maybe nobody wanted to engage her because they knew how deadly her striking was. And the only one crazy enough to run right at her was Ronda Rousey, who just went right on. I think just, you know, sometimes people drink their own Kool-Aid, and I think maybe that's what happens right there. And, you know, I'm punch drunk. We've been saying it forever. It's like, they didn't want her to take on Cyborg because I think they felt Cyborg was an elite striker, and I think that's what they got with Holly Holmes.
I'm very ashamed that I had to ask Lee to even see who Holly Holmes is fighting. 2 years ago, I did not feel about the UFC how I feel now. You know, it's like I really enjoyed the UFC. Then it became this thing, you know, and it became this thing that was borderline of what I like. I like quiet guys. It's a martial art.
Yeah.
There should be no really trash talking. You know what? I like Sam. I'm going to fight him. I'm going to do the best I can. I'm going to try to punch him in the face. That's it. Then you go on and say, Joey, blah, blah. But it just got too weird. It got too weird and too personal. Stuff about Brazil and this and that. And, you know, Ronda, I loved her at first. And then it just went sour. Like, it was just, you know, talking out of place and doing this, and then the fucking guy got creepy.
Yeah.
And it's, you could tell that something was cracking because the mother raised her hand first, and then this guy, you know, for me it was a lot of things. I saw somebody who stuck to a game plan. That's what I saw.
Yeah.
I saw the brilliance of Greg and Winklejohn,
yeah.
You know, now why John Jones and all these people. I saw the brilliance. You know, we discussed it all the time, a man without a plan is not a man.
That's she a had a great plan. Saying, dude.
She stuck to it.
Yeah.
You know, Nietzsche. She stuck to it. You know, Ronda Friday. I just got back from whatever I was doing Friday, and I went to the hotel room, and there's the weigh-ins. And I go, let's see what happens.
Yeah, me too.
And once I saw the weigh-ins, I'm like, look at this crazy fucking bitch. How she walked out there with her hair. Then she ran out. And whatever she was saying to Joe Rogan, like, I think even if you got Joe in a corner and said, what did you think about that when you asked her? Well, she everybody thinks she's a sweet girl. And what the fuck are you talking about? What the fuck are you on?
Yeah.
So it was this weird thing. And then I went on stage in New Jersey. I get the fuck off stage. I look at my phone, and on Twitter is the knockout. Like, that was on the fucking whatever.
Immediately. Yeah.
Immediately it was on. The kick to the head. And I got to tell you, I was fucking ecstatic. Like,
yeah.
I was fucking ecstatic.
It was so interesting because we were watching it. We were eating, and that Sal had was showing us the fight. And everybody's watching, and I'm just like, hey, dude. Ronda's got – when you really broke it down, you took away all the hype and all that stuff, and you thought, what's Ronda's way to win, pretty much her only way to win, is that armbar she goes for. After that, I'm like, if Holly Holmes sucks her into a striking match and she buys into it and her ego's so big that she does think she's this elite striker and she sits, she's in trouble. And then I just started happening, and I go, everybody, I go, you haven't seen the head kick yet. I kept yelling. I'm like, head kick's coming, dude. Just watch for it. And wow, when she swung and she missed her knee, and you just saw something in her eye going, that doesn't happen to me. And she got panicked, and she tried to rush her like a bull. She got spun around, and then here comes the pain. Bam! And just put her deep, man. Oh.
The way her head hit.
Just, she was out before her head hit, yeah. It looked to me.
Yeah, she was out.
The thing that I haven't heard anyone talk about is Ronda fought 3 times in 9 months. Title fights 3 times. There's no, I've been a fan for a few years. I've never seen another champion do that.
She's
to be honest.
But, listen, it's a fucking cash register.
Absolutely.
She's a walk. She was getting $10 million for this fight.
Dude, yeah. Well, true? I mean, after pay per view, I mean, yeah, the numbers on this fight are humongous. Not only, dude, I was at the store after the fight. It was what everybody was talking about. Have you ever seen that ever?
People were talking on the fucking plane. And I'm not talking about people with fucking Infinity shirts on and MMA shirts on. I'm talking about fucking Gentiles to the business people traveling. You know, I heard that what's-her-name said something, Lady Gaga and Trump. You know, I got to tell you something. What really surprised me was people's reaction. Like, all the people on the bandwagon either flipped or that many people wanted to see her get her ass kicked. Me, like I said, I hadn't had interest in her fights in the last 2 or 3 fights because of her, you know. Nothing personal. I got bigger fish to fucking fry,
yeah,
you know.
Got your own problems.
So
why do you think all this Ronda hate's coming out? Because she's one of the biggest stars in the sport, if not the world now. And then I don't have a problem with the not shaking hands. Plenty of guys don't shake hands. And you know what? She's a fighter. I honestly don't care what he does outside or until the fight's happening. It doesn't matter to me at all.
Well, I just want to say one thing real quick in that, it wasn't that long ago that we, you know, you remember Rogan going, are they ever going to not stop booing your fights? Do you remember that? Because she had done The Ultimate Fighter and did not come off well, you know, because she's an alpha. She's a super aggressive alpha, and she was on that. And Misha Tate came off looking like the nice one. Ronda came off as not looking at the nice one. And at all of her fights, she'd walk down the aisle, and they were booing her fights. And Joe goes, why are they booing you? I don't get that. So there was a time, in which wasn't that long ago, maybe 2 years ago, in which she would get booed at her fights. And the machine kind of got going, and they got behind her. Fox, Reebok, The Ultimate Fighter, ESPN, which really is trying its hardest, even though it's killing itself, to get the female demographic going. I mean, ESPN is destroying itself trying to lure female viewers. And they all just went in the high drive because Ronda could get access to shows and mediums that no one else could. I mean, to announce your fight on Good Morning America, I mean, that never happens. And that happened there. I can't understand where she was at. That's a level that I'll never even be close to. But, you know, it's like when you talk that kind of smack, you know, people sometimes are, you know, they want, if you don't fucking back it up,
I
people
really
get upset.
Stopped paying attention when the whole thing that she's going to beat up the boxer. Listen, stop. She was not going to fight Floyd Mayweather and fucking come out successful. I don't care what anybody said. And listen, I don't give a fuck what anybody says. That was just...
Do you mean boxing or MMA?
Yeah, they were saying she was going to beat up Floyd Mayweather.
But
she could beat up
like
Floyd Mayweather.
Like, at UFC, she could probably do the armbar. You don't think?
Listen, he would punch her 50 fucking times in the face before she fucking saw anything. You know, one person called me and said what happened there, the truth, was real boxing. She went up against somebody who was... Did you see GSP's trainer break it down? About how good she did with the arm. Everybody who puts the arm around her when she headlocks her, she put her wrist here and kept it away, and she would get her hips real low so Ronda couldn't flip her. Winklejohn and Greg Jackson did a fucking tremendous
job.
They're
amazing.
They're amazing. And you know what? Dana hated them before this. He fucking hates them now. He must fucking be at a Santeria place putting voodoo on them because he fucking hates them now.
And
you know, they took pictures of Dana White's face. Like, this whole fucking thing is just weird.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, I love the fighters. I talked to Anderson, this manager, the other day, you know, Sinister, and we have Herb Dean on, and I talked to, but I just, something about it the last year has just been something not really for me. You know, it's like, okay, so wait a second. So the fucking Jets, okay, are in the fucking playoffs against the Dolphins, right? But the Dolphins lost the first six games, and then they won six. So they're really 6-6. And they deserve to be in the fucking playoffs. But you know what? For some reason, I'm just going to switch it. I'm going to make Kansas City go in the fucking playoffs. When the Irishman was going to do that big fight in Boston,
yeah,
there was only one person he was supposed to fight in my world, and that was Frankie Edgar. That was no fucking German. That was no whatever. That was Frankie fucking Edgar,
yeah.
Okay?
Well, obviously that one was bad, but that's the issue. In NFL, it's just based on record. No one's making that decision. So when there's a fight maker,
right? What I'm saying is in season 11, in game 11, week 11,
yeah. Right.
If you're 0-9 and the Dallas Cowboys are 9-0, Goodell's not going to call and say, "Nah, switch that. Put somebody else in there." I did hear that they did switch a schedule because the team is really bad this year.
Oh yeah, they have flex on Sundays. They can move them up and down.
Right. They did switch something, but. You know, there was one person that he was supposed to fight.
Yeah.
That's it. And the guy's name was Frankie fucking Edgar. Not some fucking 50-year-old German guy that, you know, oh, he's a tough fighter. No. Frankie fucking Edgar. When that didn't happen, my television shut off.
No, I'm with you.
Okay?
Dude.
After she beat whatever and she beat somebody else, listen, Stop it. It was time for that fucking savage from Brazil.
Yeah.
That's what the people want to fucking see.
Yeah.
It was time for that chicken herd, yeah. And that's all we wanted to see. Yeah. But you didn't let that happen. So look what happened. Look what fucking happened. The worst fucking scenario in the world. And that bitch is laughing in Brazil right now going, thank God I didn't get my hand. Let's do it now.
Yeah.
Let me go in there now against her because I'll really shut her fucking lights out.
She still wants a fighter.
She still wants a fighter.
There's no way they let that happen.
Oh, right oh not. Well, you never know now. You never know now.
No, but I think you're right. I think if she lost to Cyborg, she just... probably be like, I could just make movies, not get punched in the face.
I think it's going to be interesting. I think Ronda Rousey will always be a legend. I don't think she'll ever have to have a real job ever.
Oh,
you know,
no.
She's going to be able to go on speaking tours and all that stuff for the rest of her fucking life. But I mean, she has to really, like, there has to be calculated moves from here on. I don't think you put her back in Wahali because I don't think anything's going to be any different. And I think. That's why they didn't want her to fight Cyborg, because they knew this was going to fucking happen. I'd rather see Holly versus Cyborg right now than see Ronda Rousey versus either of those. Ronda should go back and fight a Misha Tate or something really simple. You know, the first time that I saw the UFC manipulating everything, and I love them. You've met Dana White.
Oh, I love everybody.
Dana White's
there.
A fucking nice guy.
I love all
guy.
Those guys. Joe, so they're fucking great guys.
They're great people, dude.
Great people.
You know? But the first time they did that, it was with Rampage Jackson and Chuck Liddell, and it bit them there too because they wanted Rampage to go. He fought Eastman first,
right? He fought Eastman first,
and they got him right in with Chuck Liddell before he could really get centered because you know he'd beaten Chuck before, and Chuck at that time was the cash cow. He was the guy that was getting on SportsCenter when nobody else was getting on SportsCenter. And I did something with him on my Spike show, and he goes, "I go, yeah. So you're fighting him?" He's like, "Yeah, I don't want to fight him right now, but they want to get me in there with him quickly because they think that's the best shot he's got of winning." And that was the first time I realized. When they were manipulating shit, and it caught them right there too, man. That was the beginning of the end. It's the fight game. It's like, why do I like sports? Is because for the most part, the best win. You put the best up against the best. I live in a city of dick suckers, you know, where everybody's sucking a lot of dick, and you can see when people get manipulated here and there, and not to get super negative, but you see it happening with these new specials coming out, and everyone's like, what the fuck is this? You know, they get pushed in front. Sports is like the best take on the best. You can't fake it in the octagon. It's the best take on the best. And when she would call these people out knowing that she'd never gonna fight them, that's when I think she started losing people. And when she's going on, like she went on ESPN and she was talking to Wilbon about, hey, what do you think's gonna happen first? Me losing or the Cubs winning the World Series? I'm like, you just don't say that shit. You know, it's like you gotta walk quietly, carry a big stick. That's my opinion. I like a little shit talking. I like Muhammad Ali. And even though people thought he did something against Joe Frazier, which was disrespectful, he treated him pretty poorly. But I think for the most part, there's a bravado, but there's a way of doing it. And I just don't think she handled it well.
Now, on the other side of that, if you know anything about Ronda Rousey, let's put this on the table. She's a fucking hard worker.
I hear she's really nice.
She's very nice, and she's a fucking hard worker. So I know she put the effort into this fight. That's not going to be the case. You know, she got the knee operated on. She got the whole thing. But in her defense, listen, I don't know. What do you think is harder, becoming the champion or staying the champion?
I would say staying, it seems to be.
Oh, yeah, because all you're fighting is the best.
And everybody wants to talk to you. You know, I can't imagine Ronda Rousey's life. You can't really imagine. You can't. Guys, if you're at home right now, I don't care how much money you have at that level, knowing the type of athlete that she is, elite athlete, she's done it all. There was two things. You know, the mother came out and said she didn't like the train. Look at another
they
thing.
They already fired him.
They fired him?
Yeah.
No, they did? He's done?
I read one article. Who knows? But that I read one article that he was. I can check.
No. This was something, you know, that wasn't handled right. Now, everybody could point fingers. When this happened so quickly, guys, I just read something about Amy Schumer, and she said something about that this is not comfortable. You have no idea what this is like. you know, doing this and press and, you know, it's tough enough just being a stand-up fucking comic.
Yeah.
And now they want you to do specials. And now after that special, they want another special in 8 months. And you got to go out and take pictures and fucking go to clubs and, you know, TMZ is going to be there. And that this is not stand-up anymore. Now it becomes something else. And it's very tough to keep your game going. You know, Kevin Hart, God bless his fucking soul. He's at basketball games. He's writing jokes. He's doing fucking arenas. You know, Gabriel, bless his fucking soul. That guy has not stopped in 6 years.
Yeah.
You know, Ralphie May, 10 years, that fucking
grinding,
guy.
Grinding, dog.
Grinding, you know, every fucking week out there. Her work ethic is amazing.
Yeah.
But the other thing, there was so many other things going on in her life. So many other things going on in her life. Everybody's approaching her. You know, she's with CAA. She's taking every division that CAA's got is making $1 million with her. Because the branding, this, that, you know, I guarantee there's the toys and geese and judo accessories and there's every fucking
thing. Judo accessories. Getting,
you know, what's his name? Didn't what's his name have 76 ways to make a living and each one of them was making $500,000, Larry the Cable Guy? Dolls and boxes and this, you know, and engagements and talking to people and getting up at 5 to do radio in fucking Bulgaria because some TV show wants you to, you know. Guys, it's fucking grueling. It really is grueling. And then the expectations that you have and things that happen. And now nobody tells you nothing negative. You become so big that nobody says to you, hey, today we're doing this. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
Today we're going to, you know, did everybody else notice?
Everybody.
When she got punched in the face, she was really in shock. Reminded me of Brock Lesnar when he got hit by that kid from
Cain
Colorado.
Velasquez?
No, the other kid, the white dude that retired with the bad back.
Connor Hughes?
Oh, no. I know who you're talking about. Shane Carwin.
Shane Carwin. When he fought Shane Carwin hit him with a shot.
I was there for that fight.
He held his face. He held his cheek. That means nobody had hit him. You know, she's doing these things where she just comes out and she's flipping a guy and falling on top of him. And, you know, in training, who were they putting up against her? She's doing movies, so I really can't touch your face. She's doing ads. I really can't touch your face. So it becomes something fucking else, guys.
Yeah.
So I want you to consider all these things. When she got smacked in the face, look at her face. Her fucking demeanor changed, Jack. Like, this hasn't happened to me in fucking years.
Yeah.
Why are you punching me in the face? Like, who are you to punch me in the fucking face? You know, they have tape recordings to her on the floor. And they're, like, telling. She's like, no. I want to go back in there. She got knocked the fuck out to the point. But the other side of this, her ego was so huge.
Huge.
That hurt more than anything.
Yep.
And that's the toughest fucking thing to repair.
Well, how much did the UFC build that ego? Like, were you guys? I didn't know her in the Ultimate Fighter. Was she always like this?
Do you want coffee? Worse? Can I cut your fucking toenails instead of driving? Let's pick you the fuck up. You're great. You were great the other night. You look fucking beautiful. Did you see her on Jimmy Fallon? She looked like a fucking Halloween monster. Okay, her hair was all fucked up. They put fucked up makeup on her. Her stomach, you know, her chest was out. It's not that who you are.
Yeah.
Do you follow me, people?
Yeah.
And since you're in a different realm, you don't even know anymore.
Yeah.
You don't even know what's right and wrong.
Around you.
Guys, you don't know what's right and wrong.
She's only 28.
And she's only 28. You know, this is overwhelming for people who are 30 fucking five. Let me tell you what was one of the toughest times of my life looking at it now that we've discussed here of having a great time. But in reality, it was a tough time for my comedy ego. And I've never tried to have an ego. It was when I was shooting The Longest Yard. When The Longest Yard came out, I sat by the phone the next day with a pencil and a piece of paper. I was like, let's see who makes the biggest offer first. Okay? You know, I mean, you want me to lie to you?
No.
You want me to lie to you, fucking Triple E?
No.
And you would have done the same.
I totally respect
and
that.
You would have done the same.
I understand what that means.
You know, and you don't understand. When you're shooting a movie or a television show, you do 4 takes, they fucking laugh. They laugh like it's the end of the world. And you're turning around and going, why are these people laughing? Am I that funny? Then they're coming up to you. And then I would have Nick Swanson and all of Adam's friends. When this movie comes out, it's all over for you. It's curtains. You know, I was having fucking people calling me from Paramount. People from Paramount were already calling management teams. I had people already fucking calling me going, hey, man, we'd like to meet with you. How did you hear about it? Oh, we heard you were looking for management. I went looking for fucking management, and I would go meet, and they'd take me out. You know how many fucking lunches I went to Lee after the Longest Yard?
So what happened?
Fucking nothing.
Yeah, why?
Lee, nothing. 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 Things happened, but they happened in cultures. It happened in cultures. Okay, somebody's shooting a movie. They get home at 10 from production meeting. They're fucking sitting there. They're shooting a mobster movie. They turn on TNT and The Longest Yard is on. Oh, fuck. Joey Diaz. I get a call a week later. And then while I'm shooting, they tell me, we were watching The Longest Yard, and that's where I came from. That grudge match, that director hated me. I shot The Longest Yard with him. He told me to my face he didn't like me at the fucking premiere. He told me to my fucking face he didn't like me. It was not his call. Adam fucking, I wasn't his first choice. Blah, 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 blah. They needed a guy for grudge match. He was in the grind. He's sitting at home watching football, and I come out in the fucking GoDaddy commercials, a pizza guy. Oh, shit.
Oh, my God.
Things work in cultures. Things work in cultures here. We might be going to the store. How long have we been going to the store?
I've been doing it 15.
15 years. Has anybody ever called you and said, because before we went to the store, you know, you heard that Gabe Kaplan, I'll welcome back, Carter. The guy saw him. The deal was cut in a booth in the main room. Come here. Look on CBS. Hi, we're from CBS. We love you. We have an idea for a school teacher with a bunch of guys. We've already seen everybody. We've got the cast. All we need is the teacher. If you sign here, we'll do 13. Boom. All heard that story. Has that happened to you?
Never.
Has fucking PBS called you and said, we want somebody to get under a lizard. We want you to come down here and do a fucking opera.
Never.
Nothing. So you sit there and go, does this happen? Tripoli. Someday. After a Tuesday night with 13 people on a fucking, the only night that snows in L.A. in January, somebody's going to call you and go, hi, I'm calling you from Paramount Casting. One of our associates saw you last night at the thing. Do you know how the Sopranos knew I was alive?
How?
A 12:45 spot in the Toyota Comedy Festival, which I bombed. I followed a Latin band. That fucking Mike Robles put a spick show together, put six spicks, put a Latin band, and then put me to close the show.
Oh, my God.
You ever follow a salsa band after they do three songs?
Oh,
I haven't.
You have no idea. But this poor lady was in the back of Caroline's. So I'm walking home fucking ready to cry.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden she comes up to me and gives me a card and says, can you be in the audition tomorrow at 11 o'clock? Okay, so you never fucking know. So everything works in cultures. In my mind, I thought The Longest Yard was going to get released on Monday. CBS was in the corner and said, hey, you interested in doing CSI 22 episodes? Sure. That's what I really thought. Do I ever walk around like that, Lee? Now that you know me, do I ever walk around like that?
You don't say
Have I ever said to you, when the fucking Tripoli podcast dropped, it's all over. Wait till they see my episode of what's the show that comes on that one with the black guy and they talk you into your jokes?
Comics Unleashed.
Comics Unleashed. You ever have those guys pull you over? Dog, it's all over. Tommy is going to be sorry I'm not a regular. Wait till my Comics Unleashed gets released. People really have. And I was one of those guys. I could sit here and say people when The Longest Yard came out because of the bullshit that was told to me.
And how long were you on The Longest Yard set?
17 fucking weeks of lies.
So imagine 3 years or whatever, 4 years of lies constantly.
17 weeks of people saying, wait till this movie comes out, Joey. I looked at the dailies. Joey, Paramount loves it. I remember shooting a movie and being in Ralph's at 2 in the morning, fucking snorted out of my mind, getting Mixer. And one of the editors, he was just as coked out as I was, comes up to me and goes, dog, I'm on the editing crew of The Longest Yard. We've been putting that movie together. It's 24-hour shifts. God damn, you're fucking good in that movie. I mean, it was coming from all over. How would you react?
Right,
how the fuck
right,
would you react?
Yeah. Right.
People lighting my cigarettes, but then it was funny. The day the movie stopped shooting, that was it. No more phone calls, no more nothing. People were like, every time I saw those guys, though, they go, oh, fuck. Then Edwin San Juan, people started seeing the trailer. All this fed into this fucking, this ego was bulletproof. I never fell for nothing. I was never one of those guys that came to Tripoli and go, come here. Remember when I opened for Rogan in San Antonio? Four people came up to me and told me I was better than Rogan. There's people who do that. There's people who come back and go, you're not going to believe this. I opened up to Joe Diaz. Four people came up to me and told me I was better than he was. And that and those people, they disappear.
Yeah.
Poof, because they can't take it.
What happened to the 1,300 who disagreed with them? Like, that's like a terrible argument.
You don't understand. You do not understand. Like, there are comedians. Out of
1,200 people, four people thought
listen,
I was good.
Listen, when you start comedy, you go through minutes. Dog, how many minutes you got, Tripp?
Yeah.
I got 6.5. You know, I got 8. I got 19. One day, I'm going to put Tripoli on stage, and guess what's going to happen? Lee's going to come up to me and go, you want to do a bump? And I'm going to go bathroom, do two bumps with Lee. I'm going to forget about Tripoli. And Tripoli thought he had 19, and all of a sudden, I come out and give him the light at 31. And he's like, how long was I up there? 31 minutes. Do you know what happens to Tripoli now? When what? Tripoli comes up to me, and he has a decent set at a bar called the Squiggies, you know, where it's comedy from 11 to 1 a.m.
Yeah.
And there's a tequila special shot.
Yeah.
You know, after the Laker game.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You, see, this is all ego builders. So I say, Tripoli, can you do 20? No. Tripoli could do 16, but he'll put me. No, Tripoli could do 13.5 on a fucking good day. That's if he fucking ate right, if he slept 8 hours, if he wrote that day, if his girlfriend sucked his dick. I know Tripoli could give me 13.5 strong. But that day, I'm feeling a little fucked up, and Tripoli puts me together. He goes, come on, Doug, give me 20. And I give Tripoli 20, and then Lee comes up to me, offers me a bump. I go into the bathroom. I do two bumps. We start talking about fucking Auschwitz and the Jews, fucking Hitler. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, shit. Tripoli's on stage. I forgot to give him the light. If I come out, and when Tripoli gets off, if he has a decent set, when Tripoli gets off, I'm going to go, Trips, that was really fucking good. That was really good, Trips. I'm going to give him $5 or $10 for gas. I'm going to go, dog, you did 31 minutes. Tripoli is going to get in his car. He's going to fucking go home. He's going to get CAA's phone number. And he's going to call him in the morning. He's gonna, excuse me, who am I speaking with? This is Sam Tripoli. I'm calling you from fucking St. Louis, Missouri. Who's in charge of comedy there? Who's the big dick of comedy? Every dog, I knew I used to go to bed coked up with the numbers. I would go in the yellow pages. There was no computer back then. You had to go in the yellow pages, dial 411. Comedy Store, please. Mitchie Shore's number. You know how many times I had the Comedy Store number before I went to bed written out because I was ready to call him and say, get me on the phone with Paul. I'm not going to destroy the room.
Do you remember, I don't know how long you've been doing comedy before you got picked up by the Comedy Store. I've been doing it for about 5 years, but it was all bar gigs. So it was like a different animal. And I remember when they gave me a 15-minute set, and I was like, oh, fuck. I got to do 15. And like I could kill 10. And then there was that next 5. And I was just like, and now it's like 15? Fuck. Okay, I guess I'll try to work 15. Yeah, I'll try to not run the light by too much.
And then you would do good 10, but you would try to improvise the last 5. So the good 10 you did just got massacred by the last 5 you did. And then you figure out, let me improvise in the middle, which is really torture because then you lose them completely. Fucking Houdini couldn't bring them back.
Dude.
So you learn all these different, you know, cheats. You just learn how to cheat. When you go on the road in Texas, like those rooms in the South, those guys open up with, how about a round of applause for the troops?
Oh, yeah.
That's fucking 15 minutes. How about the Green Berets? How about a round of applause for the birds that flew over this fucking place today?
Right?
It's hilarious. They will kill time. How about a big round of applause for the waitress? Let's keep it going for Sandy, Mary, Joey, Tommy, LaRue. Let's keep it going for them.
I gotta say something, man. You know, I've been hearing this story that somebody told me that a lot of these comics now at the Comedy Store, and I love everybody, they're picking who they follow. Meaning, they're going up to Adam, they're going, I don't want to follow this guy anymore. And I don't know anything. I've never done that, dude. I've had to follow Savages since day fucking one.
Please.
And the biggest, we were talking today, they were talking about how, you know, someone had to follow Chris D'Elia this week. weekend. I guess he had this murder set, and the staff was like, oh, I feel bad for whoever had to follow that. And I go, I followed Chris D'Elia a ton of that, and that's not hard. I'm like, you want an education? Follow Joey Diaz in the OR after he just fucking flame through a room, and I've had to do that. And there's a couple guys I know when I see their name after you on the lineup, they conveniently don't show up until they show up right after the guy who's supposed to follow them is done following you.
Last week you came up and it was like you were like nine comics away from me. I was like, oh fuck.
People running, dude. Following Joey Diaz is a motherfucking education. And I'm so crazy, I almost pulled Adam aside and go, I just want to follow Diaz for a while because I just want to get bulletproof. You know what I'm saying? Because when you follow, especially when you fucking super hit, like you hit or you super hit. And when you super hit, dude, for the first 5 minutes, everyone's just talking about what they just saw. It's kind of like when Vince Carter jumped over that fucking 7 foot fucking French asshole and they dunk and everyone's like, oh my God, Triple H. And like for the first, the last time I followed you, for the first 5 minutes, the crowd just heard this. They didn't even hear what I had to say because you had crushed so hard with this Caitlyn Jenner bit that you've been working on, and it crushed so hard. And for the first 5 minutes, I just was eating a bag of fucking dicks on stage, and I had to address it. And then once I addressed it, they jumped on board with me. But it was literally 5 minutes. I hadn't had that in a while. When I first got picked up at the Comedy Store, I used to always have to follow Rogan. But this was back when Rogan was doing like hour 15, hour 20 in the OR. Back when that was something. Thank God they don't do that anymore. You know, it's like everyone's kind of cool to everybody. You know, not that he wasn't cool, but it was just a different time. And, you know, so I hadn't had to have that 5 minutes of just nobody listening. No matter what I threw out, I could have thrown out classic Richard Pryor at that moment. Nobody's getting a laugh at that time. And it's just like I've had to follow monsters. And literally, you are the hardest person I think to follow at the Comedy Store. When you fucking, when especially if you're on your A game, it is impossible. It is like stay in the pocket. Just know the first 5 minutes are just going to be like, what the fuck ever.
It is like cheating. You know, we've been going there. Let's put the cards on the table. Okay, I have been going there since 1997. What is that in years? Okay.
Three to 2000.
So I stayed out of
18
there.
18 years.
So I stayed out of there from 2007 to 2014.
So 11.
So that's 7 years. But let's be honest, from 97 to 2007, from 97 to 2005, she was giving me four spots a week. If I called in coast to coast, Monday through Sunday with the Sunday host, she was giving me four to five spots. Monday late, Tuesday, it was amazing. I remember one town coordinator goes, nobody gets more spots than Diaz. She had me on the thing. So when I go in there, you know, when you go to high school, you're only playing your gym for 4 years. When you go to college, you only play in your college for 4 years. When you go to the pros, what is a career average? 12 years? Let's pretend you stay at the same fucking team for 12 years. You play at that stadium for 12 years. Guys, I've been playing at this stadium literally for, 12 years. And I'm talking about I know every nook and cranny. I know where to take them. I know how to bounce off the music. You know, you have to do, you know, nobody's figured out the music's the whole thing in the fucking beginning. I'm a cheat. I'm a cheat. I'm a fucking cheat. I'm not a joke thief. I'm a cheat. That's it. It's a big difference. I'm a cheat. I figure out what the other guy ain't doing, and that's what you got to do. Why are you going up there dry? Listen, you're not going to follow D'Elia. The biggest dick I ate at the store was following D'Elia in the main room this year. Murder. And I knew as I was walking up. I knew, you know, it doesn't take a fucking, you just know in a room, so you have to plan it. As it's going on now, you got to go to plan B. Okay, so he's killing. So you know what? My first five is going to be throwaway. I'm going to talk about my day. Then I'm going to hit him with this, boom, 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 and I'm going to take him into the deep cave. And if that don't work, I did what I had to do. Right in your mind. That's it. Yeah. That's how you follow D'Elia, Joe Rogan, dog. I had to follow Joe Rogan a couple weeks ago, like 3 months ago, and I died so hard. But the education, made me.
Education, dude.
Education made me. That next weekend, I don't know where I went. I felt bad for the room. Every time I walked out of the room, it was like Apocalypse Now. There were just bodies
straight
every
murder,
fucking way.
Dog.
Yeah, because you just went up a level.
Yeah.
You know, I tell Lee all the time, we've been going to a kettlebell class. How long, Lee?
Three
or 4 months now.
Yes.
Lee is picking up 70 pounds. Lee, what did you pick up the first time you went? 10? A 16?
Yeah, it was like either 20 or 30, yeah.
It's what funny. Have I been saying to you? If you don't pick it up, you're never going to pick it up.
Yeah.
Right or wrong? If you, all right, pick it up. Boom. Boom. I did it 2 times. And I put it down. 51 pounds. Wait a second. I just swung 51 fucking pounds 8 times 10.
10 times 10.
You know, mm-hmm. Then you go there the next time, 60-something. We got Honor to send us a 60-something and a 70-something gorilla.
Oh, they're great.
Fucking great. I mean, fucking great, you know. And it's doing the same thing over and over
again. Education.
And over. It's education, but, like, I got to tell you, I feel like a cheat at the store. Why do you think I only go to the store once or twice a week? Because, listen, I feel like a cheat. And I know that I'm helping the younger guys. The younger guys are getting the same education I got from Paul Mooney and from Dom Herrera and from the black guy with the
dice,
dreads.
Eddie Griffin,
yes,
Joe
same
Rogan.
Same education. This is the same education. This is the same education. So when I go down there, I look at the lineup, I'm not being a scumbag. I know that people go down there from the podcast. And I know that I would hate to go down there and think that Tripoli's going to fucking follow me, so I got to bomb for Tripoli or go up there and fuck around. Tripoli wouldn't do that for me, and if I found out Tripoli would do that for me, I'd stop being his friend. He's got no respect for me as a comic. The only way you're going to get better is by following people who are fucking murdered and take a beating. Who get, bro, jiu-jitsu, kickbox. I know you go to kickbox.
Yeah.
Listen. You sign your name on something and say, I'm coming here every Tuesday and Wednesday. That's all I could do. And in your mind, you go home and you get your calendar and you go, you know what? You see this right here, what I'm getting involved in? I'm going to get my, you got to estimate. The truth is, I'm going to get my ass kicked for a year and a half. But on this piece of paper, I'm going to get my ass going for 2 years. But I'll tell you the deal I'm going to make with myself. I'm going to go 2 times a week. And I'm going to, what's today's date? November fucking 16th. Okay. 2 years from now is the 18th, is 2017. So I'll decide then. And I'll see what.
But, I like that, dude.
But if you don't say to yourself, when you get into comedy, I love these people. You know, again, my witness, Tripoli. Tripoli, how many people have you seen come and gone?
All of them.
What about the people that talk to you about money, right? You ever have people who, yeah, I can't wait to do it. And you look at them and go, you got into the wrong thing.
Yeah, man.
If you wanted to make money, you should have sucked dick or sell drugs or pimp your girlfriend out.
Yeah.
That's if you really want to make money.
Yeah.
If you come to me and you go, I want to get into Joey Diaz, I could tell when I'm having a conversation. I could tell your passion, the look in your eyes. Oh. If you got a tear in your eye when you're telling me that this fucking hurts. I want to go to Hollywood. It's in me, dog. All I need for them is to see me. I got 18 good minutes. Listen, what people don't know is, well, feature acts move to L.A. It's yeah. Where everybody's a feature act when they move here,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I see it in people, and that's what it is. I tell people all the time, how fucking Tripoli, please, because I know you're a student of the game. Tell these motherfuckers how hard it is to drive to the store when you have to follow Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
And you know he's doing the Nicole Adam bit and this one. And he's having killer sets. And you're driving down there. And you're asking yourself, Lee, it's like I said to you, come to jiu-jitsu. I'm going to have a 300-pound black belt just work with you all fucking day. I'm going to get my ass kicked. Nobody likes driving to that. It's like me saying to you, you got to drive down to fucking San Diego. I got a guy with a 10-inch dick that's going to fuck you in the ass.
Yeah.
That's the longest 2-hour drive of your fucking life. Right. You're playing for fucking traffic and accidents and the fucking ISIS to blow up the 405. You're praying for all this shit to happen, but it ain't fucking happening. And all of a sudden you pull into the store and your heart's beating and you walk in and he's on stage and he's fucking murdering at the 8-minute mark. And you go in, you get a fucking beer, you come out, you know, you're pacing, you're peeping there. You don't even want to hear the fucking laughter because your anxiety is going to kick up. I'm telling you. And next thing you know, now you have a decision to make. They come to you and they go, we just gave him the light. You have decisions, man. You got two options.
Okay? Yeah.
You could run in your fucking car and go home and tell them you had to shit your pants and your mom called and she's having a urinary tract infection and the whole fucking thing. Or you could go on stage and Lee, I'm telling you, Lee, you don't know how many times I've sat there behind Don Marrero going, I could get in my car right now. I already
100%.
I already got the Coke in my pocket.
Yeah.
I already got the gram from Chewy. What do I give a fuck what happened? I would sit there, Don Marrero's up there killing with fucking precise material those days.
Laser
material. And I'm there on a Saturday night. The spot was supposed to be 11:45. It's 12:20.
Yeah.
Jesus, Lee, you don't know what that fear is.
That OR is voodoo, dude. And the reason the OR is so white, the Comedy Store is an education where nobody else is the Comedy Store does tag team. I say this all the time. There is no host to put out that fire. You're walking in. You're going backdraft, dog. You got to walk into a 5 o'clock fire, and you got to survive, dude. And I've gone in there, looked in there, and rooms are shaking, dude. Like some of the hardest people I've ever had to follow was like, man, Leslie Jones, when that chick is on, dude, it is going to be you're going to take a beating that day because she does everything. She's funny. She's got crazy jokes. She's high energy. She's up there sweating, just sweating to the oldies, you know, with a fucking, she got a do-rag. And then you got to walk up to that. And there's no like, hey, go up there and do a couple minutes to get, you know, make them forget what the fuck they just watched. You got to go up there and you got to find a way to get them to listen to you. Eat that 2 minutes of them just going, you see that? I think she's in Ghostbusters. She's so fucking funny. And you got to eat that. And then you got to get them into your train of thought. And it's like, when I got picked up at the Comedy Store, man, I was getting bumped. You can ask Eleanor about this. I was getting bumped by Andrew Dice Clay every night for a year. He would find me on the list and he would go, I'm going to go up right before him. And he'd try to put me deep every day. And I at the time I was such a fucking asshole and I was a knucklehead and I was a hurt fucking little puppy. I didn't appreciate the education I was getting at that time. And I took it too personal. And you know, since then we've made up and we're cool. And I love everything he's doing. I love watching him work. Like watching Dice, I got to see Dice do the nursery rhymes on New Year's one year. One of my favorite things I've ever seen in my life. But just the education of having to follow that fucking animal. And everybody can say what they want about Dice.
Shit.
He's a monster, dude.
That's a fucking monster. That's a fucking monster.
Comedy Central, like 91st greatest comic of all time. You're fucking nuts, dude. That guy is a fucking murderer.
I used to host on Sundays, and the secret, like I said, I've always been a cheater at the store. You got to learn how to cheat at the store. They pay you $25. You really think I'm going to walk up and down those fucking stairs when I was 318 with a gram in my pocket 20 times to bring up 20 comics from 10 to 12? Get the fuck out of here. So I would go up. I would get the 10 o'clock spot. I'd call two people. I'd call Dice first. Dice, Joe Diaz, I'm hosting tonight. Come on down. I'll put you up first. Really? What time? You know what fucking time? 10 o'clock. Okay, I'll be there. Click. If he'd say no, I'd call Rogan or I'd call Mooney. Mooney, what are you doing? None, I'm at the house. Mooney, I'm hosting. Come on down at 10 o'clock. Really? You're going to put me up at 10? 10:01, I'll put you up. I'll be there. Or sometimes say 11. And I'd even, all right. And I go to my guys and go, listen, you're going up. Mooney's coming. All right. And people are pissed. No, you're moving them up. Hey, what do you want me to do? I got to do it. Mitzi just called.
Mitzi just called.
And I would fucking put them up. But my favorite was Dice. Mooney I learned from, but in a different way. But Dice taught me how to blow up that room with control.
Were you doing it just to kill time, or were you doing it just because you to see comedians you wanted to watch?
I knew that the best comics that came out of the store always hosted. I knew to be really good. David Letterman, the dude from America's Funniest Videos. A lot of those dudes hosted, so it was a lot. Andy Garcia used to host on Monday nights in the big room, the improv. The hosts at the store have always been, so I always wanted to learn how to host. I always knew that you couldn't learn how to headline unless you learn how to host. Everybody wants to headline. How are you going to headline if you can't control the show?
Yeah.
The quarterback is the fucking host, you dumb fuck.
Gotta get the party started.
That's the guy that gets the party started, keeps it alive. If he, listen, you got a good headline of the host, That show was deadly. The best hosting job I ever seen ever, ever in my life. D.L. Hughley, The Black Show on HBO.
Def Jam.
Def Jam towards the end. Hosted it, got a standing ovation as a host. That was always my goal. Never happened. That is impossible to get a standing.
He hosted my premium blend when I did the stripper in a wheelchair bit, and he came out and like half the set was his reaction to my fucking bit, dude. He was great, man.
He's great. Doug, there's just people who know how to control the game. But to learn how to control the game, you got to host. You're at home. The comics are at home going, well, Joey, how do I do that? I'll tell you how you do that. If you're not working, you're working. So if you got the weekend off because you think you're a headliner and you should be co-headlining, but the town over, Bethesda, whatever fucking hellhole you live next to, has a Friday and Saturday, and they got some shitty, go down there. I'll host for free. Really? I'll cancel the other host, and you could drink and eat for free all weekend. Who gives a fuck? You're practicing. You're practicing. And everybody wants to host at the store. But if you learn how to host in a bar, God damn, you get good fast.
Dude, when I started in LA, in Vegas, that's where I started. We had one open mic every other week.
With your boy Scott Ross.
Scott Ross. Doug Stanhope had started the scene. Then it was Mean Joe Coy. And he was kind of doing his own thing. I was doing my own thing. And we had one open mic every other week. So you'd always hear these stories about New York City comics getting up like five times a night. You got to do it, man. I'm like, fuck, I got to get up every night as much as I can. So I would go to bars. And I go, hey, man, what's your dead night? And they'd be like, oh, Tuesday. Blah. I go, give me Tuesday. You got a stage. I'm going to do an open mic. Let's work out. Deal. I make a little scratch. I get some stage time and some free drinks. I would just do fucking an hour on stage in between each comic, just working out, killing hecklers, dude. And I was born and bred in bars. So when I came to LA, I was such a wild child because bars in Vegas were nuts. I had to learn how to play comedy clubs, but I had that fearless style of just going up there, just fucking crazy, dude. And then I get the training of the Comedy Store. So it's like very rare that I will walk into a situation I ain't been in a thousand times before. And just knowing how to handle the situation, if shit ain't going good, be in the moment, talk about what the fuck's going on, how they ain't liking you, and you know what, I'm not liking them, so why don't we all just get past that and just like making funny jokes to get them back. It's really amazing when you get out of the monologue and you just start being real with people, how shit changes, and that's what the Comedy Store forces you to do. You gotta be in the moment, dude.
That's the other thing. The Comedy Store teaches you to use your head as a comic. It teaches you that, you know what, I have a joke that's topical, okay? But my spot's at 11. They've already heard that joke eight times.
Yeah.
You got to assume. So I got to throw that out the window, even though it's your best joke right now. You got to throw it. It teaches you how to become really smart. It teaches you how to go up there and fucking rage. Like, my cheating for the Comedy Store?
Yeah.
What are you going
to
ask me?
What's your goal?
When I go to the Comedy Store?
Like, out of a set, yeah.
Okay, when I go to the Comedy Store, when I perform at a club, I have two different fucking goals. My goal when I perform in a club on a weekend and you're coming to pay and see me is to give you the best show possible. And I take a few chances, but not really. I give you what I've been working on because I want you to just flow and know who the fuck I am and get the fuck out of there and laugh. When I'm at the Comedy Store, those 18 minutes... If you know, as soon as the light gets off, gets on, I'm done. I never run the light at the store because there's no need to.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is what I am at the store, okay? When I go to the store, I got 14 and a half minutes left, and I'm down by fucking 9 with 2 minutes left to go. There's 7 plays, and I got to do 6 of them. I'm going to score, we're going to kick off, they're going to fumble, and then we're going to do 3 more fumbles.
Yeah.
That's it. Did you hear what I just said to you? When I go to the store, I go to the bar, I get water, I get fucking worked up, I walk by, I listen to the laughter, sometimes
check
I go
out how it's going, who's
check
up
out
on
how
stage.
It's going, I go in there, I sit in the back, I smell. My favorite thing is to go up 4 comics before me and sit in there and watch the different comics and really laugh. You, Steve Byrne, Sebastian,
That guy's a machine.
The fucking Italian kid. The other
Brett
kid.
Brett Ernst.
not Brennan. It's the other kid that's been going up that kills me. That's
Mike Costa?
Mike Costa.
Oh, Mike Costa is another guy. I watch him follow you because the same guy, I'm not going to say his name, didn't show up to follow you. And I knew it was going to happen to me, man. I go, oh, I saw you, then him, then me. I'm like, oh, that dude ain't going to show up. Sure, she didn't show up. And that was the first time I noticed it was with Mike Costa. And you were murdering. You were doing your Caitlyn Jenner bit, and it was murder. And I'm like, oh, man, who's going to follow this? And I look over, there's Costa, and he's just walking over. He's like, someone's got to fucking do it. And you know what? He walked up. And he fucking...
He took it. He took it. You have to take it. You can't... Here's the secret. You cannot... There's two secrets. One, in your mind, when you go to the store, when you're driving to the store, Lee, I always call Lee, just so you guys know, I always call Lee and tell him I'm going to pick him up, and 10 minutes before, I tell him he's not going. Do you know why?
Why?
Because I'm going to war.
Yeah.
Okay? I got no time to dilly-dally. I don't want to hear about his day. I don't want to hear about his girlfriend. I don't want to hear about his diet. I don't want to hear about nobody's diet. I don't even put the fucking radio on.
Why do I talk about my diet?
Nothing. I don't want to hear nothing about your shoes.
Well, why do I talk about
No. I'm just saying. You know I love you to death.
Just spitball,
you know I love you with all my heart. I'm just saying, when I drive to the store down the hill, there's no radio.
Yeah.
There's no radio. Like that, I'm going to fucking war, okay?
Wait, when you're alone, you don't have the radio on?
No. When I go to the store, no.
He's in war mode.
No, I'm in war mode. I got no time to talk. I don't want to see nobody.
The best.
When I fucking get out of that car at the store, when I park, I go, and I open up that fucking car door. I give Doc a hug. I walk into the kitchen. I give the waitress a hug, the bar. I get a water. I tip them. I walk back there. My mind is at war. War. Like, that's when you were a little kid and you had to fight that dude at 3 o'clock after school. That's it. That's where my head is at. I don't want to hear about the weather. I don't want to hear, like, whatever you're saying to me, you could talk to me. But it's really not, unless you say bomb or $10 million, you're not going to get to me. Or,
right.
I got a blonde that's going to lick your asshole. It's not going to happen. Whatever conversation you're having with me when I'm at the store before I go on stage, it's not going to work out for you.
What time does that what time do you start feeling like that? Like, is it when you get in the car to go to the store, or is it like at dinner?
As I'm getting dressed, as I'm putting my clothes ready, as I'm putting my clothes on the bed to jump in the shower, as I'm in the shower, my mind's already going.
What are we going to do tonight? What jokes are we going to talk about?
No, but I'm also thinking about the new joke I'm going to try, which I got to hide. I got to hide.
That's a big thing.
That's the thing about the store. You have the opportunity to try a new joke on Tuesday, so I got to figure out where to put it. Where to put it and hide it, and how to know how to get myself out of a hole if I go in that fucking hole.
Yeah.
So would the difference basically be, like, at the store you can go crazy because people didn't pay to see you? But when people pay to see you, you have to be a little bit safer.
That's so interesting because I feel the same way. It's like on the road, I'm doing my act because people have come to see me at the Comedy Store. I want to fucking expand, dude. I want to expand my shit. Like, I always try to work on new shit. But on the road, I'm trying to fucking, I'm putting on a show for them. And I don't know if sometimes if that's backwards, where you're supposed to go on the road, work on shit, bring it back to L.A. polish. But the Comedy Store has always been this weird kind of dojo for me where it's like, and even though sometimes I don't know if it's still that, if it's like, I know it's the greatest club on the planet, and sometimes I'm just watching everybody just do murder, the same murder set every time. But it's like, I like to work on new shit. I love trying to find a new opening joke.
Yeah, you have to hide it in there.
Now, I know you have to sell tickets, but what percentage of people do you think are coming to your shows from the podcast, Joey?
60%.
Really? Do you think
15 of people that somebody has turned them on?
Yeah.
You know, 10 from Comedy Central, this is not happening. 5 from Locos Comedy Slam.
So that's the point. Don't you think that now that with comedy people are so knowledgeable that they might even enjoy being like, "Hey man, just go for it. If it goes bad, that
Here's the deal. Let's talk fucking business here. In 2005, when The Longest Yard came out, I had great opportunities. I had the guy from APA booking me. At that point, let's be honest, at that point of comedy, I was doing comedy for 14 fucking years. I was nowhere close to being a fucking headliner. You know why?
Why?
Because I was fucking around. because, yeah, I was funny. Listen, you give me a fucking joint and tell me there's going to be a gram of blow afterward, and me and Tripoli are going to go somewhere, and there'll be a few broads there, and some of them suck dick. You know what? I could be fucking funny. I could be cute. I could go up there with my club soda. You know what I'm saying? I could have three bits and stretch it into an hour and ask questions and talk shit and take chances. I could take chances, and you know what? It's 50 fucking 50. You know what? Those people are going to go home. I don't give a fuck what people think about society or how it works. You know, Twitter, Facebook, social media, there's nothing as strong as word of mouth. How do you think Aerosmith fucking got heard? We went over this. You know, it's 1970 fucking five. People saying Aerosmith is strung out on drugs, they're not going to come back. How did you fucking get known in those days? What did you do? You got in a bus and you traveled from city to city 18 fucking times. And you rocked and you went in there with different fucking bands. And sometimes you headlined the small bar, but sometimes you go in there with fucking heart and be the one of the guys on the fucking, you know. And your word gets out.
You grind.
You know? You know what I had going on in 2005? You know why by 2007 my addiction was the highest it ever was? Because of all this shit. Because my comedy wasn't working. Nothing had happened from The Longest Yard. And the comedy should have been fucking working. I had been doing it for 13 fucking years. I had been at the store for fucking 8 years. How can I be going to these clubs? I went to Atlanta. I went to... At that time, you know, I was laying down on stage, hammered, and fucking Beaumont. I OD'd. I went to Houston. I was drinking on stage. Listen, man, no. No.
What were you thinking at the
time? Have to go. I was thinking that that's what Kennison did. That's what the greats did. They got high and went up on stage, and they giggled, and yeah, they had a little bit of material, but nothing was really, really worked out, and... Jesus fucking Christ, I was horrible at 14 fucking years. There was no stories. It was Rodney-ish. It was very Rodney-ish, you know, like no point to it. There was no personal life in there. If it was personal, it was something about a sex thing.
How did that develop?
Laziness. Laziness. A waste of fucking time. A waste of fucking time. But I could do 20 minutes because of the store. See, the store was my cover. It was always my cheat. Because it's not how many people you kill. It's who you kill. If I go into the store once a week and I murder that room, the whole fucking town's going to hear it every fucking week. Yeah. Joey comes in, kills, and leaves. That's it. He doesn't even get a drink. He doesn't even say hello. You don't even see
him. Get in, get out.
He's like a fucking vampire. You're going to play Tony Bennett or you're going to fucking sit there? Look at you, fucking higher than a kite.
Great shaved head.
Yeah, he looks beautiful. Buddy. He looks beautiful.
These chocolates are good.
They're always good.
I love my. That's one of my favorite parts of being here is how baked you get, Lee. I don't party anymore, so I get to live through you and how baked you looked right now. You just look great.
I'm glad to be of service.
Thank you, man. Somebody twice
as smart. As I what do you on my garden about?
I forgot about the two stars.
How do you think I feel?
Two star? Oh, you ate two stars?
Wish you another one.
No, thank you.
Oh, man. I wish I loved weed. I like to go fast, dude.
They make weed that does that.
They make weed that makes you feel like you're doing coke?
I don't know if it's that much.
That'd be great.
But don't they have, like, active weed?
Active weed?
Sativa, but it's not what Tripoli's looking for. Tripoli's looking for a kick in the fucking ass is what he's looking for.
Looking for
you
the...
cleaned up, man. I remember when you were at the store in the beginning. You were young.
Dumb.
I always liked you. I always liked your trips. And I always tell people this story because it's one of my favorites. I learned from you. Sometimes you just learn from people. The main room, it's like your second week. Mitzi puts you in there. Bunch of old people. You're up there talking about ex-Chinese people on ecstasy. I'll never forget that. They were staring at you and you're selling that joke like, fuck it, I'm there. And I knew you had X in your pocket and God knows what else. And then you had a beef with somebody one night at the bar. One of the bartenders, you fucking were hammered. I walked in, Trip, you gotta go. You looked at me weird. And I'm like, oh, this motherfucker's half Indian. He gets crazy when he has a few cocktails.
I was nuts, dude. I was nuts, and I was immature, man.
No, but that's what's part of, that's what I liked about you. That, listen, man, I don't want a guy that goes in there, you know. Sometimes a comic, that was my problem. You know, I had watched too many fucking E! True Hollywood Stories, and you watched this Bill Hicks, and you watched this Pryor.
Yeah.
And you watched this Kennison, and the behavior was great. But that behavior is unacceptable in the comedy world today.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
It would get out in a minute. In a minute. You go to a club now and you do eight balls and don't show up. It's too politically correct, the club scene. Nobody. You don't hear about nobody fucking up no more. Like 10 years ago, you heard it every week. Who was at a club? Who fell under a fucking table? I mean, fuck, 15 years ago, the comedy scene was different.
Yeah,
and 15 years ago before that, you know, you look at all those pictures of the Comedy Store. Everybody's got a fucking drink in their hand. Everybody's doing blow off in the main room. You know, I know they still do drugs up there. I don't see it.
Yeah.
I don't see it.
I heard that too. Nobody tells me about it anymore.
No, I'm happy. It has nothing to do with you. You don't have the aura. You don't have the aura.
Yeah.
You know, we went up there. The aura is all over you. Your nose is wide open. You know, how many fucking times at the store did people give me shit? How many fucking times at the store did people give me fucking drugs? Just ignite me. Like that, you know, a lot of people have different opinions about that place, but some of them, they say it's like the fucking Satan's house.
Yeah.
Like it brings your addictions up. Though I was thinking about a story that I went there one night. I used to hook up with this little fucking hot redhead there 15 years ago, just on Sunday nights. I mean, she gave me that shit, ecstasy, the shit you drink. She came up on a water bottle one night. We were drinking on the stairs. She was fucking crazy, and so was I. She was the wrong person for me to meet at that time in my life. This is 98, 97. I was basically living in my car. I would hook up with her on Sundays. I'd go over there, do laundry, steal her quarters, fucking do laundry, fucking eat her ass. We'd do drugs all night. We'd get fucked up. And Monday morning, I'd take a good shower because I knew I was back out on my own again. Back to fucking curse on in the car, taking showers at Ralphie's.
Yeah.
And this went on. And then I didn't see her. And she went on to do heroin. Bro, she had a tremendous medicine closet. You know, let's say, I don't know, I was 36. She took me to a Janet Jackson concert. This chick liked me, and I liked her. But I knew that she was crazy. I knew she was dating other dudes. You know what I'm saying? I knew when I went over there, the phone would ring. The night I would, you know, it was always drama. But I was very happy just to be with her. I hadn't seen her in a while. And then she started calling me. And one night I'm at the fucking store. And I had Marilyn Martinez, God bless her soul. It was 8 weeks, 8 years last week.
Oh, my God. Really? It's been that long?
November 3rd was 8 years. 8 years I stopped doing blow. That right around there. The 7th, the 5th, 8 years. I have not touched cocaine. 8 years. Right around Marilyn's death. Marilyn was holding eight balls for me. I was doing this fucking scam, and I didn't want the coke in my house. And that was the way I was going to pay for something. That was my insurance. So every time I made a deal, I would take 5 grams out, and I'd keep, you know, 2.5, and I'd give Marilyn a rock eight ball. And I go, Marilyn didn't do it. So I gave Marilyn like 10 of these fucking packages, Lee, over about a 3-week period.
As like a coke savings bank?
Like a, yeah, to hold for me, right? To hold like 10
coke eight balls. Bank.
And one night, you ever just get this fucking wild feeling. At this time, I'm living on Gavin's couch. And I thought about taking the coke to El Compadre and selling it on a Sunday night. Like, just nobody's ever there on Sundays. Let me go get, you know, if I get 200 a package, 5 of those packages, then I'll do the other ones, you know. And I called Marilyn that Saturday night, and I go, Marilyn, do me a favor, bring that shit to me. She's like, really? I go, yeah, bring it over. She came back. It was a manila fucking envelope filled with eight balls. I took it in the trunk, and I put it in Gentry's car. Gentry used to lend me her car back then. And I put it in the trunk of her car, and I went to Gavin's. But no, before I went to Gavin's, I was doing fine that night. I was not snorting blow. Again, I repeat, I was not snorting blow. I knew that what was in that trunk would kill me, and I wouldn't stop. I would not fucking stop. Do you know, I go on stage at the store, you know, Saturday night, 11:45, full house, fucking level the room with stupid fucking jokes. As I'm walking out, this, I used to do a lot of cocaine jokes in those days. As I'm walking out, some guy comes up to me and puts something in my hand. I look at it, and it's a baggie, and there's maybe two lines in there. A little taste. In those days, I could do a line, drink a soda, eat something, and go to sleep. Good.
Yeah.
That's how high I had the Coke. In those days, I could do one little line of Coke and a little jizzed up jerk off real fucking good.
Oh, that's the best.
Come all over my leg. I would go in the living room, fucking make a sandwich, eat it, drink a soda, and smoke like two cigarettes. I'm done. After that whack off in the turkey sandwich, I'm going to bed.
Whack off in the turkey
but
sandwich.
Dog, as I was snorting it, it started burning my nose like a motherfucker. I'm like, this is speed. And I went home, and I couldn't stop jerking off. I jerked off like 18 times. Yeah. And all of a sudden, about 5 in the morning, I was just thinking about this the other day, about 5 in the morning, the fucking pager goes off. I'm in my tent jerk off. The fucking pager goes off. And who do you think it is? The fucking redhead. Oh, my fucking God. I called her back. She's like, what are you doing? Where are you? I go, I'm at Gavin. She goes, I'm picking you right up. Fucking 10 minutes later, Hong Kong, I get in the car. I don't know where this bitch went at 6 in the morning. She got 2 bottles of vodka and a case of Starbucks coffees, those Think coffees.
Yeah.
And we went back to a house by the Directors Guild.
Yeah.
And fucking, we started snorting. Next thing you know, I took the Next 10 packages. You know. I took the 10 packages out. I went over there with fucking 20 fucking grams, 30 fucking grams of blow. Sunday morning at 6 a.m.
Oh, my
God. Oh, my God. Now, she had a sink, and over the sink, there was a cabinet. In that cabinet, I swear to fucking my daughter Mercy, that woman had everything. Like, when I would go over there on Sundays and spend the night in the morning, she'd go, do you need anything for the week? And I go, what do you got? Well, I have these Klonopins, and I have this. I have a little MDMA. She just give me a bag of goodies. I leave there with 3 sleeping pills, 2 Tylenols. If you only want to sleep 3 hours, I have these. If you want to sleep 10 hours, I have these. If you're going international.
She's like a voodoo doctor.
Oh, no, dog. This chick was on. She was tapped into that whole thing.
That's women.
And then she would disappear for 15 minutes, and cause she thought, you know, she thought like Joey fell off a fucking banana truck. She'd tell me she'd disappear. She'd disappear for 20 minutes, bro. And then she'd come back with a nod with a fucking lingerie on. And she'd do a crazy dance for me. I'd have to sit there all coked up and put on with a... Listen, when you're coked up, ladies, I got advice for you. If a guy's coked up and you're with him, he don't want to see you dance. All he wants to see you do is suck his dick.
Yeah. Right?
When you're sitting there all coked up and you think there's somebody on the other side of the fucking wall,
so
you know what?
Fun.
If this goes down, I want my dick sucked. I don't want some girl dancing for me. Oh, my God. And she starts dancing. And we triple, you know me a long time. I would empty the package and cut it into like 5 lines. We were at that point, like by 1 o'clock in the afternoon,
oh
each eight
God.
Ball, my heart was beating. We put dirty movies on in 3 different rooms. I mean, we were smoking cigarettes. It was fucking hard.
Awesome. This story makes me want to go take a
horrible,
shit right now.
Horrible,
I'm having coke blows out.
This started on Sunday. It went all the way to Monday.
Oh, man.
We fell asleep Monday afternoon, and Tuesday, I had somebody pick me up. But here's the moral of the story. Thursday, I was still barfing from all the Valium she gave me.
Oh,
my God. Everything she had, we ate. Like, we ate every hour. She came back with a different fucking pill. And I remember driving and being at a light. Like on Cahuenga in Hollywood.
Oh,
and all of a sudden, I felt the puke coming up 2 days later. And all of a sudden, I went to cover my mouth, and the puke came out, and I had fingers open, and it just squirted in different directions. And one of them squirted
Komodo
up.
Komodo dragon style.
Oh, my God. One of them squirted up. And as I'm driving, it kept squirting on my roof. And I had to wipe it. Oh, God, it was horrible. That was the last bender.
Oh, really?
That bender with somebody that I went on. Like after that, I never called that crazy bitch back. She called me years later after that. And she goes, how you doing? And I was going to New York to do Analyze That. That was big for me.
Yeah.
And I was at the store, and she called, and she goes, I'm at Denny's. Remember when Denny's was on Sunset next to, now what's at Denny's? The Jewish place, the Israeli place.
Oh, Aroma.
Aroma. Before Aroma, it was something else.
There was that Denny's.
And that Denny's, guys.
Shady.
That was the real deal. If you walked in there at 3 o'clock, oh, my fucking God. So I go. She goes, I'm at Denny's. Come meet me. I go to Denny's, dog. And that was it. She had the bags on the eyes. She was nodding. She had bruises on her legs. She had a skirt on. She looked like fucking death. Her hair had been pulled for like 3 months. And this was a beautiful fucking girl.
Heroin, you think?
It was heroin. And then we started talking. And she's like, I would love for you to finger me here. And I was like, are you fucking... I mean, she was gone. Gone. And listen, don't get me wrong. Anybody else, I just wanted to go to New York and shoot this fucking movie. I didn't want to do blow.
I
knew just getting involved. Like, if I fingered it, it was all, I was going to miss this flight.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is the last thing I need. And then I never saw her again. And guess what, guys? Boom. I saw her on a fucking commercial for a plus size. Then I saw another commercial for something else.
Recently?
No, this is like, because I hadn't seen her. This went down in 97. The drug fucking overdose at a house. And then that thing would analyze that had to be 2003. And when I popped the longest, 2005, she started popping up in commercials. And then I bumped into her one day at the thing on Fairfax and Holly and Sunset. What's that grocery store there? With
Rock and Roll?
No. Right on Fairfax, on the corner there. They got that fucking Whole Foods.
High
level.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I bumped into a fucking there.
Trader Joe's?
No. It's a small little one.
It's either one of those. It's either Whole Foods or one of those ritzy people.
Yeah.
But Fabeman used to live down the corner, so we used to go there for lunch. And I went over there, and that's when I see her. And she goes, yeah, I'm kicking ass with whatever. I got off the heroin. She goes, the guy I was dating robbed me and gave me hepatitis and shit and fucking VD. And they found me on the corner almost dead. It was horrible.
Oh, my God.
And I go, that night I saw you. What were you on? And she goes, the last time I saw you was that 3-fucking-day bend. You never called after that. I go, it was, you know. I didn't mind going deep in those days. That was just too deep.
Oh, yeah.
And every time I saw her over the 6 or 7 months, we got deeper and deeper and deeper. And then one night she just took me too fucking deep, and that's it. Nobody makes me do 25 fucking grams of fucking blow overnight.
That's crazy, dude. I used to party a lot too, man. And I was telling my friend the other day, I remember one time, because sometimes when you're in your blow phase, you forget where you got to be the next day. And I was doing a ton of fucking blow, dude. And then I got a call from Paul Hughes. He's like, hey, man, are you ready? I go, what? He goes, we got that fucking charity event today. I'm like, oh, fuck. I had to do a police LAPD charity event to keep kids in the inner city off of drugs. And I was fucking coked out of my goddamn skull, dude. A little bit of coke, a little bit of speed, and I was jacked. And I remember showing up and going, oh, dude, just don't sweat too much because everybody here is a fucking cop, man. And I went up there, and, like, the worst thing, the hardest part about doing that gig was, like, not only do I have to probably not be on drugs, but I also have to do work somewhat clean and not offend anybody. And that's the worst thing, because they were doing stuff about, one guy goes, you know, let's give it up for Officer Garcia, one of the best Mexican police officers. I'm not Mexican, dude. I'm Puerto Rican. And they were like, they were getting infighting on who was like Puerto Rican versus. So they were like super fucking, you know, sensitive, dude. And I'm like, oh, man. I had to do 15 minutes. I did like 10, survived, and then they wanted to take pictures with me after, and I'm like, oh, you're fucking killing me, right? So I'm like, okay, I'm taking pictures, and I'm just like, just fucking whacked out of my skull, and everything's going good, and then I see a cop go, like, kind of give me that look like, hey, what's going on with this guy? And I'm like, later, just bang, and I just fucking wham out the door, and I got away, but it was the craziest fucking shit ever. Just me coked out of my skull doing jokes to cops for children. It was fucking nuts. That's the place I would put myself.
I have no idea how I lasted 10 years in this town doing the blow I was doing. And I could lie to everybody and tell you, well, my cocaine habit went on. I came down here from Seattle, and I think I did well for about a month. Then they told me the doorman sold blow when I got a package here, a package there. Then I got that Taco Bell commercial. I got that check for like $1,900, the first one. $1,900 when you get here as your first check. $1,900 was $1 million to me at that time. And then I made $80,000 in 4 or 5 months. I was going out and picking up whatever, like a gram and a half, 2 grams. Like, I remember living in the hotel that is the hostel now.
Yeah.
When it was a hotel and you were only allowed to live in there for 3 weeks and then you had to move out.
I was just telling the story on Crappies. I used to live there too.
Oh my God. You have no idea the things that happened to me.
Where would you go for that other week?
You'd have to go to another hostel.
No, you have to go up to, they had another hotel around the corner.
Because you could only stay for 3 weeks, yeah. So you didn't get renters and rights. So they'd always make you keep moving.
So I would usually go on the road, or I never had to go to the other one. The other one was where is the pizza places now. There's a pizza place on Cahuenga, and I forget that street up there. It's kind of a dirty street.
There's Wilcox. There was one Wilcox. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's one right over there that's now the hostel. Then there was one kind of right near where Capitol Records is, right across the street, up a little bit. There was one right there.
No.
And I used to, I got banned from there. You know why? I told a story on the Crab Feast is that I when I first moved there, me and Scott Ross were living together. Scott didn't have enough money at the time to go get an apartment. So we were saving the money I'd saved in Vegas to get an apartment. He was just trying to make a little money at Starbucks. We were literally living off him ripping off Starbucks and eating 29-cent hamburgers from McDonald's at the time because they were having that big, like, what, 50 years ago deal, 29-cent. We would live off that. We'd buy like 30 hamburgers and we'd eat that for the rest of the week because we were so fucking broke, right? So he would work at Starbucks. I was trying to find a job. So we'd stay in this hotel, and he would go out and do stand-up, and I would try to do stand-up too. He was a little farther ahead at that time. So it was late night. It was so hot in these weeklies that I would leave my hotel room just to walk around Hollywood Boulevard, just to walk around. And I did it like for 2 weeks straight. I'd always leave my hotel. Well, 1 week I'm sleeping. I get a knock on the fucking door. It's the manager. He's like, you got to fucking go, dude. I go, what? And he's got these two fucking giant black guys with him. Two huge.
Yeah, they were crazy.
They're fucking. He's like, you got to go. I go, why? He goes, I don't have to tell you why. I go, dude, okay. I mean, like, I'll go, but what did I do? He goes, motherfucker, you're leaving here every night. We know you're a fucking hooker, dude. You're a gay hooker. We know you're hooking. You're selling your ass, and we don't let that shit happen here at this fucking place. I got kicked out of my place because they thought I was a gay hooker. So they throw all my shit out into my car. I drive to Starbucks.
What was their evidence?
Because I was just leaving the house. That was what they took as a sign of gay hooker. And I go and I tell Scott Ross, Christian Slater just staring at me as I'm fucking bawling that I just got kicked out of a weekly because they thought I was a gay hooker.
No, dog. Listen, again, every time I think of that creepy hotel, because it was creepy when I was there, they redid it now. It's the hostel.
What were the rooms like? Like, if you're living in a hotel.
The worst.
The room was, this room was a room this big. It had a double bed that fucking squeaked. The leg was broken. There was no mice or no rats, none. There was a hot plate, a little refrigerator, a TV. There was a table, a chair, and like a little couch. And then the bathroom was horrific. It was just a little fucking shower. It was clean. It wasn't bad. I forget what it was at night, at 10-something a week or something. It wasn't bad. You didn't have to share the shower.
Yeah.
Which I liked. Like, I lived in San Francisco where you had to share a bathroom and a shower. You have to stop in the middle of the night and go in the hallway and take a shower. I was living with a girl. I got to go with her. I don't want nobody knocking on the door. Then somebody burglarizes your apartment. You got to watch your door and the fucking shower. You know, that's what people are waiting for. If you go in the shower and they go and see if you left your door open, boom, it's open fucking season. I lived off that shit for fucking years. I was a shower dweller.
What do you mean they? You mean you. You would wait for people to do that.
Oh, fuck yeah. San Francisco, like a motherfucker. There was a bookmaker. I got his keys. He'd take like an hour. He used to get his keys. I made the fucking copy and put them back, and I'd rob them every week, those slips. I was fucking nuts. Look at Lee. Lee, what's up over there, cocksucker?
Just fucking high.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's great.
Let me give some shout-outs. You know, I didn't bring my glasses, so I might say your name wrong. Gino Jacobelli and the fucking crew from Hoboken. Thank you for bringing me the cheese. I brought it back with me. They brought me some fresh mozzarella from Hoboken and a big pie and some wine. I drank a bottle of wine. I gave the other wine to the staff. The fucking pizza I shared with the staff, with the mozz I brought back with me, and I made a tremendous sandwich yesterday. So I give you my heart, Gino. Love you. Thank you for doing that. Andrew Nordahl, I love you, cocksucker. You're a savage. Pat Shea, kicking ass with the podcast. Christian, thank you for the chicken cutlets. Sean Taft, thank you for the time, my brother. Joe Kenyon, I'm sorry that I was confused. Joe Kenyon showed up Thursday night, and I knew him with the long hair, and he had the patch, but I couldn't put it together until I got back to my hotel. But you know I love you, cocksucker. That Troy Christian. Yeah, this Jagged Hips. Fuck. Death Squad Nashville and the other Death Squad chapters.
Oh, they're all good, man.
Brendan A. and Chandler Riley. I love you, cocksuckers. Something fucking funny happened this weekend to me. I got to talk to you guys about it because it was a lesson from comedy. I went back. I did the Stress Factory. You ever do the Stress Factory?
No, I've never done it.
New Brunswick. Nice little club. Good crowds, crazy. They try to be politically correct. You got to school them up front, and then you can take them where you want to.
Yeah.
Great, great fucking audiences this weekend. But you know, man, you come out here, and you do this, you do that. You know, my ego's in check. You know, I'm very happy. I love Lee. I love you guys. I don't have to be at the store every night anymore fighting, you know, trying to talk shit and listening to fucking people telling me my job to the fucking stiffs waiting for a spot. Remember, there used to be a lot more creepy people 10 years ago that didn't have a spot. They were comics and they got spots, but they didn't get spots. And they'd still go up there and they'd be lurking the list and go home, go somewhere else, you know?
Yeah, I don't get that.
You know, I've been very fortunate. But I didn't realize how fortunate I was till this weekend when I went to Jersey. And, you know, 80 of my friends came out. And I'm looking at these guys, and I'm like, these guys don't want nothing from me. These are the ones that the girl that used to forge my report cards when I got left back in the 7th grade and I was retarded, she showed up with her sister. You know, Chuckie McBreen showed up. The fireman, Anthony Avello, showed up. I grew up at these guys' houses. I mean, literally, since the time I'm 15. We were talking about I drank punch in his house one time with bees in it, live bees. And he goes, you know, I told you there was a shoe in there, too? We just threw a shoe in this bowl. You know, these are, you know, Focaccia, the kid who drove me to Pink Floyd. We went to Pink Floyd and lit the balloons
up. What's his name, Focaccia?
Joe Focaccia.
I saw that you put that on Twitter. You're like, Satan was there? Like, oh, shit.
Satan was there. It was fucking amazing, man.
Focaccia.
This girl was there, Marjorie, who I swapped a bit with on my fucking stairs in the 7th grade. One time, you know, we had a crush. She was a cheerleader. And then, whatever, she grew up and I grew up. And she told me something at the end of the show. We were eating. The guy brought, Gino brought pizza. And she took a slice of pizza. And she goes, do you remember when I drove down the shore to watch you open for people? I opened for this dude once down in Rascals, and I walk off stage, and I have another show on Friday, and the door guy goes, there's some people here to see you. I go, what? He goes, I swear to God, go to the bar. There's three women there to see you. I go in, it's Marjorie with two of her friends. They were like, you were great. That was fucking great. You made me so proud. Jesus Christ, what are you doing here? You know what I'm saying? But here she is. I got to tell you, this had to be 2000, 2001. Here she is 13 years later. And she told me, she goes, Coco, what didn't I go to? She goes, I went to that horrible show in New York. Did I ever tell you guys when I did the one-man show in New York? Oh, my God. And I taped it and I sent it out and I never got that one bite from it.
Video or audio?
Video and audio.
Do you still have it?
I lit that thing on fire.
Oh, man.
Let me tell you what happened. Let me tell you what happened. No. I don't like none of that stuff. When I moved from Hollywood up here, I had, you know, 200 CDs, VHS tracks. And you got to figure out what the fuck to do with them. So you have to put them in and see what's on them. I fucking found it. And guys, listen, I cry easy. But this, oh my God, I cried a horrible tear. I couldn't believe how fucking bad I was. But I didn't think I was good. At that time, I was chasing an envelope. You know, it wasn't until I stopped chasing an envelope that comedy was what I loved. And then I got good at it.
Right.
It was 98, 99. Josh Wolf had just gotten $500,000 fucking deal for doing a one-man show one time. One time at a workspace. One fucking time.
He got $500,000 deal?
$500,000 deal.
That guy's gold.
Two times. From one fucking story, one night, never done again. And it was all moves, all mind games. One guy made an offer since it was hot. Somebody else made an offer since it was hot. Somebody else made an offer. And all of a sudden, boom, you had somebody just said, what's the offer here? What do we need to do? Here, boom, that's the envelope we're fucking writing. We're developing it. We're doing this and this and this. It was fucking amazing. That was when, and then everybody started doing one-man shows.
Oh, yeah.
And I had an idea, and the intermission was Biggie Respect. Oh, my God. And it was at, like, one of the workspaces in the village, and all my friends were, it seated like 189 people went, you know how much money I made, guys? Fucking nothing. They gave you nothing. It was a workspace. They swallowed the 25 fucking bucks. Not a dime that I fucking get. Not even a fucking thank you.
Oh, my God.
I thought the people from HBO were going to be there. Ugats. Nothing. Then I did it again here. What is it? Don't they have one here? The HBO workspace? They used to on the...
It's on Santa Monica.
Santa Monica. Okay. Yeah.
That's where I did the first ever Naughty Show.
Did you really?
Yeah, I was the first one to sell out that little room. I couldn't believe it. Like, no one's ever packed it like this. Packed it out.
No booze, right? Booze, like, they have, like, beer or...
The Naughty Show. Yeah. We did great shit. We did hidden camera stuff. I did something where I went door-to-door knocking on people's doors, telling them I was a registered sex offender and I was moving into the neighborhood.
I still haven't understood. But, you know, I still can't understand why a lot of shows are even fucking made. Tripoli... Ari and I had this discussion once about you. That one day, Trip, I don't know nothing about pornography. Okay? I'm a 52-year-old guy. That if a porno girl walked in here, I would know what she is. I do not go to strip clubs.
I am either.
Not current at all. How many times have I driven? How many times have I gone to the store? How many times have I driven past that strip club? The one right down.
Sevenvale? Crazy Girls?
No, the one closest to the store.
Oh, yeah. I forget the name.
The one that they lit on fire. Jewish Lightning. And they found the fucking cigarette. Jew Lightning a week during the holiday, during Passover, 10 years ago. Okay, you have that. I've never been to none of those, the Sevenvale. When the girl I moved to L.A. with was a stripper, the one on La Cienega.
Oh, I know. All the way deep down by there. Cross street from the...
Yes, down there.
The theater.
She danced down there.
I used to fuck a chick out there. It was so great. I'd just drive up in the break.
That strip club?
Yeah, she'd come out. I'd fuck her in my car.
That's a crazy strip club. That's a nat. That's where I saw Chris Farley. Like 3 weeks, maybe a month before he died. Fucking Gilzill to the coked up. And at that place, they have you can't even do a lap dance. You have to do a lap dance 5 feet away.
Yeah.
He was just drawing money out of it. He was sweating profusely. It was fucking horrific. But the moral of the story is, and I'm sorry to fucking take you there, was just seeing these people, what they meant to me. Like, I'm not the type of person that does shit for people. Like, you know, you always hear kids that, well, I got into the car painting business because you were a car painter. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine doing that. But I guess part of the fucking thing for me when I got into comedy was I didn't want to leave a loser. Like, I left there a fucking loser. Like, just fucking total. I mean, guys, no. There was nothing. I didn't leave there with... Nobody would have said, hey, listen, I'm about $1,000 and that guy lives in 5 more years.
Right.
I wasn't fat. I was in shape. But there was no way I left there. I left there with no dignity whatsoever. No, in 85, when I left there, no dignity.
What a different
then
time.
Then I went back in 91, and some people had forgotten, but people were like, just stay away from me. So they stood away from me. Here I am, 30-something years old, working at a sandwich shop and a fucking delivery boy, doing comedy in the city, fucking driving a limo at night, like, oh, my God. And all the people I went to high school would go to this deli, and they'd see me fucking wrapping sandwiches and shit. And I'm like, I really got to do something with my fucking life. This is it. This is it. I'm 30-something years old, faxing fucking menus to fucking businesses, and I'm doing okay. People would fucking die if they knew what I was doing, that delivery business. You know, I would go in there at 10 and walk out at 2. I'm walking out of there with a yard and a half cash. Nobody knew about it. And now I'm heading to another fucking gig, you know, and I'm snorting. I'm going into the city. I'm picking up grams for Tripoli. I'm picking them up at 25. I'm giving them to Tripoli for fucking 50, and he's buying 3 a day. Come on, I'm living like a fucking doctor. I was passing around sales packages. He was giving me 4 bills a week. He was giving me fucking 10 sales packages, drop them, whatever you want to do. 3 days, I drop off 10 sales packages. He gave me 4 bills on Friday. I was a fucking cash register, just fucking work. And
champion.
Nobody do nothing. Everything was all fucking cash. It was, oh, my God. And here I'm trying to do comedy, and I'm sucking Sam Tripoli. And every day I go to that sandwich shop, and people come in, hey, man. So I hear you're a stand-up. How's it going? Like, you know, people are just shitting on me every day. Do you do Caroline's? No, not really. Oh, really? Do you know who this guy is? You know who Sam Tripoli is? No, not really. You know what the fucking you feel like? You feel like a fucking...
Oh.
I had already done prison time, and here I am back in my hometown fucking making sandwiches. And I remember going, after 10 months, going, well, I don't want to fucking keep making sandwiches. But if I go to Colorado, I really got to dive into this fucking comedy game and play it for keeps. And I fucking committed to it, and here we fucking are, Sammy Trips, you know.
And you're killing the game since the beginning.
I'm not killing the game from the beginning. We all know, Doug, I'm an old dog. And like I just revealed tonight on the podcast, when I go to the comedy store, it's like somebody doing steroids. I know every nook and cranny. I've done so many.
Yeah, but dude, some of the hardest sets, I remember before you left. And I was just starting to really get my groove, man. I was starting to like, okay, I'm getting comedy right now. I'm starting to get it. And I followed you one day, man, and it was so bad. It sticks out my mind as a top. There's been probably 2 bombs I've had in there that were so bad they stayed with. Those marks will stay with me for the rest of my life. One was following Lisa Lampanelli late night, and the other one was following you. And I remember following you, and man, you just went up, you gave me a good intro, and I go up there, and I'm just throwing what I thought were classics at that time, not really having any kind of tools to deal with the situation, just throwing fucking punchlines into an abyss of, like, nobody reacting, flatlining for 15 minutes. And I remember running out to my car and just sitting there going, man, what am I doing in this fucking business, man? I've been doing this for, at the time, 8 years. I thought I should have been somewhere by now. And it, you know, I'd had a little fucking bumps in my career, some negative bumps in my career, and I was just like, maybe this isn't for me, man. Education, dude. Education.
If you don't look back and you don't have 15 to 20, not bombs, but embarrassing
moments. Detonations. Just fucking.
Where it's something. It's just, you cannot put your finger on it. If it's your shirt, the way you look, maybe your ego.
Your shirt? It would be, that would be the reason?
Lee, dude, it could be any, Lee,
it could be no anything, idea. Yeah.
How you walk up, what kind of beer you have in your hand, how you're holding your beer. Does it reflect? I mean, there's so many little things. What do people say? How long does it take for people to judge you? 10, 8 seconds, 32 seconds, whatever the fuck.
I've had people tell me that after my they said, I didn't want to like you when you walked up. I'm like, why? It's a stand-up club. It's not a police lineup. You're not picking who fucking raped you. I'm telling jokes here, man. Why wouldn't you want to like me? But that's just the thing I talk about on stage. I have a very dark look on stage. You know, I don't walk up. I'm not wacky funny, telling ha-has, you know what I'm saying? Spitting ha-has at the kids. I'm fucking up there. I'm walking up there looking like a fat vampire. Fucking people wondering what's going on.
Look at the shape of Lee, Doug. That's what's going on right there, Sammy Trips. Look at the shape of this fucking dude.
I'm doing good.
He's in the deep, deep,
deep,
deep abyss tonight. Sammy Trips, let me tell you something. There was a couple times I had to follow Mooney, which was a fucking disaster. There was a couple times Dom Herrera, which at the time he didn't like me, so he'd go a little harder, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, he didn't like me at first either.
Oh, my God, he didn't like none of us guys when we first got to the store.
Oh, he used to, he gave me a shitty intro.
Yeah. He used to do, Wild Willie Parsons used to give me shitty intros. But there was one bomb that I went home and really, I said, that's it. This has to change.
Call it a day.
Improv. I got sandwiched in between Nick DiPaolo and Doug Stanhope had to follow me.
Oh, wow.
And the host was horrific. And Nick, you know.
Just teeing off.
This is 2000. This is 99 Nick. Just at his fucking machine gun writing brilliance. And before he went up, somebody else went up in that caliber. I don't remember who. I'm not going to say and make up a name, but it was somebody in his caliber. And then I went up and I died. And then Stanhope went up and took it to a different level. And part of it was goofing on me. And yeah, I wasn't mad at Stanhope for goofing on me, not at all. I was mad at myself because I got sucked into it. And I stopped at the time. I was living in my car and I would go to the store and snort till four and then go to. I would go
sleeping. We got sleeping Buddha over here.
I would go to Ivar.
What? I'm awake.
I would go to Ivar. If everybody would leave me at the store, I would go to Ivar and I'd park in Ivar in front of a business down the corner from that restaurant and I'd fucking sleep there till five. And then I'd go inside and I'd sell screws and nuts and bolts on the phone. But they had a fucking 1-800 number. So I got all the comedy club numbers, and I would fax everybody my schedules every week. Just kept doing it. Kept doing it.
Schedules of what?
Just made up fake schedules from November of 98 to fucking March of 99. This is what I got. You know, and I would write on a calendar and mail it to people.
My friends did. I know a buddy who did that.
Yeah, too. You had to do that in those days. That was before the computer craze really came in.
Yeah.
Then there was a 99. There was people that you emailed, and they would email you back. Yeah. Like, what bookings email? I'm never going to fucking come. Like, I stayed away from emails and shit. Fuck you. But you had a fax. So now I had access. I would have to fax other people, and then I'd throw my faxes in between. Jesus Christ, how many fucking faxes do you send out?
Oh, those cost money, right?
Yeah, in those days, it cost money. So I used to just fax my schedules to people. And, brother, little by little, people started calling. And I started filling in weeks. El Paso,
Comedy Strip. That's what I do now, dude.
People started fucking hitting me up. And that's how I got on the road in the beginning. Little by little, I was selling screws on the phone, $200-$300 a week. Before that, I was selling investment packages to some fucking movie and toys with organs on Vine, where Chewy used to live in that same building.
Where is Chewy?
He living in that building, probably. But in that building, there was a dude from Knott's Landing, and he was the office manager.
Yeah.
And there was three of us or four of us, and you had to be there at 12 to 4.
I have to pee.
Jesus Christ, right in the middle of the fucking thing. I got to pee too, but I'm holding it in. That's perfect, because we'll do the fuck. Hold on. You got to take a key. If not, you'll just stand up.
My balls are going crazy.
Here you go, right here. Jesus Christ, here you go, right here.
You're the best, dude.
All right, let's fucking end this thing, Lisa. Look, he fucking leaves the door open. What are you fucking for? Jesus Christ almighty. Anyway, we did the best fucking we can. So I'm happy you people tagged in. I hope you like the fucking curtains. It's a whole new look for Mr. Flavor here. Let's start with the fucking host of the year. I love these people. You know, today I went to fucking jiu-jitsu. And in the middle of my thing, I'm thinking about how maybe this fucking shroom takes a little too much for me, man.
It's strong.
It makes me fucking breathe too much.
Isn't that good? They always tell you to breathe.
But sometimes it just makes me breathe too fucking much. Like, I'm going to cut it down to one pill. But I know it works, and that's what I'm trying to say here.
That's good.
Shroom Tech is a great fucking product. Shroom Tech Sport. Shroom Tech Immune. I took a 5-hour flight. I took 10 of them before I got on the flight. I took 3 more when I got off the fucking flight. Look at me. I'm Slim Jim Magoo today. I'm feeling good. I'm looking good. I got a good night's sleep. And I didn't have much fucking jet lag whatsoever. So do me a favor. Go to Honor.com. Take a look at the great supplements they have available for you from Alpha Brain, Shroom Tech. They got the T Plus. They got some great stuff. But you know what? I'm not intelligent like Lee, so I can't break it down for you. Just do me a favor. Go to Honda.com. It all starts right there. Take a look at the great list of supplements they got. If you like something you see, go to the box, press in.
Church.
And get 10% off your first order. And get, close it all the way, and get 10%, get it sent directly to your house. Also, they have the Stay On It program that you get. It's monthly, right sent to your house. So do me a favor, go to honor.com right now and press in.
Church.
And give Alpha Brain a try. Let me tell you something. You snort this fucking shit with a couple fucking, nah, you don't snort. It's a joke, cocksuckers. You take a few Alpha Brains. The good thing about that is 100% money back guarantee, and they don't want the product. So go to honor.com right now and press in.
Church.
Boom. And get 10% off your first order delivered right to your goddamn house. Also, I want to give a beautiful shout out to Hitty Sigs, the best e-cig on the fucking market. Take a look. They got the cigar. They got the e-cig fucking cigarette right here. 24, 16, 8, and 0 milligrams. Just in case you want to make a New Year's resolution.
Like a champion.
That's right. Go to HittySigs.com right now. And usually these things are what a piece?
$20.
Now they give them to you 5 for 50. Who's better than Uncle Joey? Just for listening to the fucking show. So go to HittySigs.com right now and press in.
Joey's Church.
And get 5 for 50. 1,200 guaranteed hits. Whether you're smoking the cigarette or the cigar, they taste fucking tremendous. I'm getting emails from people saying, I took it to Vegas. I took it to fucking the casino. I blew smoke in people's faces. They got all confused and shit. Go to HittySigs.com right now and press in.
Joey's Church.
And get 5 for 50, which is really 50% off. That's a fucking bargain. You understand me? If you go to one of these stores, they're going to bang you out. You're only going to get 2 or 3 days of use. This fucking thing, I've been smoking it for 6 months. Are you kidding me or what? $10, 6 months, 1,200 guaranteed pups. Get your shit together. Go to HittySigs.com right now and get your special fucking deal going on right now for our listeners. Also, NailedItLife.com. These people specialize in dabbing equipment, but their fucking specialty is that beautiful vapor pen, one of the best vapor pen in the business. I still got mine. It works with different attachments. It works fucking tremendous. They also are the Gummies and Manos. If you live in California, I don't know if they're in Oregon or any of the other weed-friendly states, but do me a favor. Go to NailedItLife.com. They got a ton of stuff on there. A little pencil, a dab in, torches. You can light yourself on fire. They got fucking everything. Now, you can pull a Richard Pryor. You can do whatever the fuck
you
want.
You're going to let yourself on fire.
Yeah, don't set yourself on fire. It's a joke. It's a fucking joke, all right? Anyway, go to NailedItLife.com right now and press in.
Joey Diaz.
And get
20% off
the vapor pen, which is usually 50. You get it for 40. Who's better than you? Now, do me a favor, Vegas. I don't ask you for fucking nothing. You know, me and you, we're fucking straight. You bailed me on this special. You came out. Do me a favor. Sam Tripoli, like I was about to tell him before he fucking rudely interrupted and got up like this.
Oh, snaps.
Let me explain something.
I was going to explode. I tried.
Well, you gotta be a gentleman. You got to go, hold on. Can I interrupt before you got up like fucking somebody shot you?
Who shot you?
I remember one day I was talking to Ari, and I went somewhere and I saw him doing the naughty show. And like I said, I don't know about strippers. I don't know about fucking porno people. You know what? If I gotta be honest with you, when I'm around porno people, my skin fucking, I feel itchy. So I looked in there, and I looked at you on stage, dog, and I gotta tell you, I told Ari this exactly. I go, you know, when you watch Tripoli doing his naughty show, it's a shame, because one, when he's on stage, if I could tube it and say to him, there's a chick back there that wants to lick your ass, so get off stage right now. If you're having a good time, you won't do nothing. And you were made for that show. Like, you pick your genre. That's it. It's your show. The thing that shames me is that it should be on once a week on Showtime for 13 weeks with a different comic, different girls, a female host. They got all this other perversion on. We might as well put that on 11 o'clock Thursday night, 12 o'clock, 1 a.m. Who gives a fuck? Just something completely different. Nobody sold it. No, you know, I know you were doing something with Comedy Set, whatever. It's just so weird how the shit that matters that should be on TV with all the channels we have, you know, right now there's got to be FXXX, which will show titties after one.
Yeah.
Hollywood with titties in a bikini if they let Sam host and tell his fucking jokes and Fucko dresses up like a bunny and does catapults out of a fucking cannon. You know, something completely different. Stand up with a circus. I would love to see something like that. A fucking zoo.
I tried, dude. I'm still trying.
Why don't you just stream it on a porn site?
Well, no, I'm trying to.
You're like Pornhub to stream it.
Because it's, you know, I think it's just more. I think porn stars are just a small part of this really big circus. No, it was a show that had porn stars. It wasn't a porn show.
But no, but I know it's not a porn show. But Pornhub is one of the biggest sites in the world.
Yeah, I think when you put it on a porn site, they just want to see girls get fucked. I want people to come and be like, you know, I mean, I'm not against it, but I just want, you know, it was meant to be where people could get do real shit and have fun. And we used to pack it out. We did it like for 6 years live and it was fun. But now I want to stream it somewhere and I'm just looking for the right place to stream it. And, you know, there's been a billion knockoffs of it. The funniest part about the Naughty Show is everybody thinks they can do the Naughty Show without me. They've tried it their hardest. They completely, like, just, they don't take me into account. And it's like, that's what I do. I'm really good in the fucking moment, man. And so we're working on it. I'd like to live stream it or do it on pay-per-view. That's kind of my goal. I'm just trying to find the right place that will let the people who come up and let me shoot that fucking shit.
You know, for years you bump. Lee, can I get a water? You have an extra water?
Yeah, but.
For years you bump into people and they develop this and develop that. And they sell you their idea and you smile and you wish them luck. And, you know, you go home and take a shower. Your concept to this day. You should make some more fucking noise. Like, I don't make enough noise in the goddamn podcast.
You should be in there with his ball. You think I want to get up right now?
She's so high right now.
You should have got a hammer and hit it through a fucking wall. Why don't you do that?
Such a great television.
600.
You say to yourself, this show, Showtime's got 9 different channels. You know what I'm saying? 9 different channels. There's a show on HBO that I found fucking amazing. I do not like porn. I don't like nothing about it. I can't watch it. I'll jerk off from memory.
Yeah, some I do that too. Highlight reels.
Some chick shows me a tit.
You guys can do it just from memory?
Right.
But I jerk off from it. I do my highlight reel.
Oh, my God.
But there's a girl on HBO or Showtime that has a show, and she comes on, and she sits on a stool completely naked.
Porn star?
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. It's completely naked, real cute.
I know what you're talking about.
Looks, sounds, acts just like Felicia Michaels. First time I saw that by mistake in a hotel room, I'm like, is that fucking Felicia? You know, she's squeaky, really cute, fucking tremendous body. And she sits there and talks about the blowjob in 1882 and how they fucking did this and they did that and they did this. And it's, I gotta tell you, I fucking hate all that shit. And she holds me. You know why she holds me? She's cute. She's her. She's not trying to be anybody. She's a fucking dipshit. And then she goes back to her old movies. This is me when I first started with no tits. And you see the guy fucking and she's yelling with a fucking mask on.
Yeah.
It's a fucking interesting show.
Yeah.
She talks about her clit. And then she talks about other women's clits, and there's not 4 women going, and they're faking, and all 4 of them are getting more and more fatter every fucking week. It's just her, and she always looks good. I don't know if the shows are old. I don't know if they're new. I don't know if they're just... But
I forget the name of
why. Why can't Sam's Tripoli Circus from fucking Naughty Show come on, or Naughty Show?
I don't know, man.
I'm not here to disrespect you. I'm just saying, when I saw it, to me, it was a fucking circus of funniness. It was something that I hadn't seen. It was like, I don't know. It was at the Improv.
Yeah, I did the W recently. I put 200 people in there. People love the show, dude. It's a great show. Sorry about that. It's a great show. And, you know, I'm with you, dude. I think about that all the time. Like, why didn't I do this? Why?
Saturday night is you and my main man, Ryan Sickler.
We're at Backstage Bar and Billiards. I don't know if you ever met Big Daddy Carlos, who owns Velvet Margarita on Cahuenga.
I don't know that.
But he opened a place down there. It's this nice place. Felipe Esparza has been there.
Oh, yeah, he told me. Okay.
Yeah. So we're out there, and it's going to be a good time, dude. An hour of fucking power, I promise you that. I got this hour. I'm trying to find somebody to let me shoot it. I might just GoFundMe, get fucking $12,000, shoot it myself, shoot it like crisp, nice, but do it myself. And so that's, you know, I got this hour that I fucking love, dude. It's like all these crazy stories.
And Sickler's doing an hour too?
But what we'll probably do, we'll probably end up both doing like about 40 each. I'll let him close. We always work together.
Going with you. Who's open?
No, it's
going
to be me and him. Me and Ryan Sickler. Then we've got some locals who are really, this chick named Sharp. She's really funny. Gooch. Do you know Gooch from Vegas? Brandon Gooch, Han. He's like, does the little radio station. Literally one of the funniest dudes. Like, if he was in LA, he'd do great. And then, Matt Markman, who's one of my favorite people. Hilarious comic, man. Vegas is an interesting scene, dude, because there's
Vegas
so
is very interesting.
So many theaters. I heard perform.
There's a ton of shit during the week. People go out sometimes from LA. They go to Vegas to hang out with Edwin San Juan. Edwin's fucking killing it.
I love Edwin.
Edwin's
yeah, we have a bunch of people out there. We have like Doughboy and then Freddie Correa.
Yeah. Yeah, Freddie's great too.
They got a nice little scene, man. Listen,
I want to be here and there. That's my goal because I used to go to college there, and that's where I started. But I think it's going to be an artist community. If you work hard and you got a little cash with you, you can do show like within these hotels are trying to keep people in the hotel. So they want to have shows. And now what they're doing is they'll have one stage that will have like five shows in it during the day. So you have family shows during the day from noon, and they go all the way to midnight. Every 2 hours, there's a new show.
So and this show you're doing Saturday, where do they get fucking tickets at?
They go to Ticketfly. It's called Comedy Chaos.
Let's say I'm a communist.
SamTripoli.com, or you can buy at the door.
All right, so you can buy at the door.
$15, make you holler.
That's it.
Love you.
Saturday, what's the date?
That's the 21st.
Do me a favor. You know I don't fuck with you people. Go down there, hang out, bring them a fucking whatever. Try to put a Cosby in, whatever the fuck you want to do.
Bill Cosby watch, me? That'd
watch,
be hot.
Watch his drink, put a Cosby.
I've been roofied, dude, in Cleveland.
You did?
Yeah, they roofied
did
me.
Did they suck your dick?
No, this little titted, this chick with huge tits. I was just couldn't stop talking about her tits. She was like 5'1 and just all monster tits. And she brings me a drink, and the next thing you know, I'm waking up on Chad Zumok's fucking bed. He's like, dude, you got fucking weird. I'm like, I don't remember. Remember any of it, dude?
You ever do a roofie, Lee?
No, and why would they roofie a guy? It doesn't make sense. Wouldn't you just have sex with her?
We'll just roofie you one night, Lee, and then we'll.
I'd love to watch that. And maybe fuck those tits.
And we'll let Lee fucking pass out, and then we'll draw like a fucking little thing on his forehead, like a Nazi sticker.
I'm never taking another drink from you ever again in my life.
You sound so high right now.
We'll text your mom. Picture you with a Nazi look. Your mom will fucking fly out of here and pull you out of here quicker than a fucking. It's good to see you again, Sammy Trips.
I love you, dude.
By. Listen, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, San Francisco motherfucking punchline. Wednesday before Thanksgiving, 11:25, Irvine Improv, 8 o'clock show. You'll be out of there by 10 fucking 30. You go jump up and down, whatever the fuck you're going to do. Lisa, I'll be there with T-shirts, giving out autographs and taking pictures. And that's it, people. We'll be back Wednesday. I don't know what fucking time. Don't ask. I want to give a big holler to everybody who came to the shows from the Stress Factory and my Jersey peeps. I love you with all my heart. Sam Trips, thanks for coming.
Anytime,
Saturday
dude.
Night at the fucking Vegas.
Backstage Billiards.
Backstage Billiards and my main man.
SamTripoli.com.
Lee fucking Syed kicking ass over there. You good, my brother?
Yeah.
Krav Maga, motherfucker.
Just go to LeeSyed.com.
All right, let's do this.
Yeah. Lee, I want to do your podcast.
I would love to have you.
That sounded creepy.
No.
You're Stevie Wonder right now. You're just like, Ebony.
Okay, this podcast is brought to you by Onnit.com.
That's right.
Go to Onnit.com and use the code word CHURCH to get 10% off all their great optimization products like Alpha Brain and New Mood. Go to HitE6.com and use code word Joey's CHURCH to get 5 for $50. HitE6 is better tasting, longer lasting. The proof is in the vape. They've e-cigars and the e-cigarettes for you. And go to nailedatlife.com and use code word Joey Diaz to get 20% off the premier vape pen on the market. And if you live in California, they're also the makers of Los Gumbis Hermanos, some of the best edibles on the market.
That is awesome. The best, Joey.
Thank you, my friend. We try.
Hey! Got to pay back! Hey! you got to get ready. Start a big payback. Yeah.
got